Previously.
1, 2, 3. X-rated, the X-Men Animated Review Show.
The images you are about to see may be disturbing.
Perfect.
Very, very true. Welcome to X-Rated, the X-Men Animated Review Show.
They be busy doing a bit of renovating since Gambit's last visit.
Well, I mean, Andre seems to be doing some renovating.
I'm just calling in from sunny, from my vacation in Cuba, just to let the fans know that Davin is such a taskmaster. He only let me join my vacation. I had to call in while still in Cuba.
Who are we? Well, of course, we are your hosts.
How the heck are you, Furball?
I'm pretty good, Rogue. I'm your host, Wild Skeletonal. That's a hard one to say. Skeletonal. And maybe it should be Skeletonal. Ugh, that's even harder to say.
Skeletonal?
Skeletonal. You get the N back in there.
Skeletonal. All right. Yeah, that's fun. Let's talk about this for 20 minutes.
And with me, as always, is my co-host.
Forgotten. Desperate to belong.
Ouch. As a fairly insecure person, that's hurtful.
Nathandre Summers. And funny, his name is Summers. He looks like he's enjoying summer climbs right now.
Still here in sunny Veradero, Cuba. Mm-hmm. You know, just, cursing you for roping me back into this trauma factory that is the show I loved as a child.
The dead calm of the wind is remarkable there.
It is. Yes, it's deadly calm here.
Really?
I am actually back home. I have returned, unfortunately, to Canada, although I do love it here. It is nice to be home.
It's just a little colder still.
It's fine.
Yeah, it was a good day today. Yeah, real nice. And we have a guest with us.
We need a handsome jawline that begs trust and respect. A poster child king.
Wow.
I get a forgotten lonely thing and their guest gets like a king. Jesus.
So poster child king.
It's funny because we all have beards and it's like, how do you tell if I got a strong jawline or not? Mine might be weak underneath this wool.
That's why you grow a beard.
Mine is weak under here, so this is why I have a beard. Yeah. Hanif Jelani Robinson back with us again.
Hey, welcome, Hanif.
Well, back with me again. Andre wasn't here last time.
Yeah, that's right.
You meeting Andre.
You did an impromptu need to do a trailer reaction on the one time Andre couldn't do it and roped in Hanif event without asking me, by the way. This is what co-hosting is, folks. It's like a relationship. You have partners that do things that you don't agree with.
When you're co-hosting with me, it is for sure.
But the one good thing he did was have an EFON, so that was good.
Exactly. No, it was a fun episode.
Come on, buddy.
But tonight, we're here to review X-Men 97 Season 1 Episode 5. Remember it.
A fairly forgettable episode in which nothing important happens.
Hold on. Okay.
Oh, man.
Okay.
Left my
tissue. We're here to review season one.
My other idea, episode five. My other idea for this was to dress all of like in a black suit, like I was going to a funeral.
No, I had that.
That would have been a good idea.
I thought the same thing, yo. I was like, maybe we should all dress in black.
Oh, we should have. Well, I'm in dark blue. Normally, I have a black t-shirt.
I got a black shirt, kind of, but it's like multi colors and shit like that.
Yeah, that's cool. I like that. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Wolverine's on this shirt. In the corner here. Yeah. That's something. All right. Spider-Man 2.
Oh, it's just a general Marvel shirt, is it?
Yeah. What a weirdness.
And we are here to talk about Remember It, which is a title that means a few things that I'll talk about later. But one specific thing, which is relevant to the episode. I mean, I kind of assume everybody listening to this has probably seen this episode by now. God help you if you're only listening to me recount it, and that's how you're experiencing this show. Well, you should be watching it.
Yeah. Stop everything right now. Go watch it.
Yeah, come back.
And then come back. We won't be offended. In fact, we'll be offended if you don't watch this episode first.
And the thing about the title is that I kind of knew it was going to be centered around that one particular character, but I just didn't think they were going to, like, rip our hearts out.
I'm going to reference what. I do think it's a double meaning, but I'll explain that I guess a little later. But yes, I didn't think about that because I know he said that before. Yeah. But and then when of course when it's said later, it's like, oh yes, of course. But
and it's one of my favorite lines from him. Actually, I play that scene where they're fighting Sinister in the Nasty Boys at least like twice a month.
His name's Gambit, mon ami.
Yeah, motivation.
Yeah. Well, you know what? We have a segment here. A new one. Collections.
Oh, boy.
With Hanif.
Yo.
Because Hanif is a collector of fine things.
Fine things?
Yes, including things like this.
Oh boy!
There it is.
That was my dinky little attempt right there.
Look at that!
I finally got me a hold of some stands, and I was like, "Ooh, I
know what I can do." This one. Ooh. I didn't tell Hanif I was going to do this, but these are great. So you know, once things in my hands, you know.
I think Hanif should have fully committed and painted Wolverine's claws pink for that other pose. ruin your figure just to do that one gag. That's awesome. They look beautiful, dude.
Look at this.
Ooh. What?
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah,
one.
I know.
Oh,
right?
Man. You know what?
No, I should take that logo down.
Hold on. I feel like basic action figures are so expensive nowadays that I don't really buy them. I'll buy the occasional statue, but like those ones are super nice. So they were like $50 each or something.
They're not cheap, right?
Actually, the 97 line was still fairly cheap. I got them for like $24,
$25. No, those are you in America?
Huh?
Are you in the States?
Yeah.
That's why.
I'm one of those types that I will buy new, used, out of the package. I actually bought a couple from, like, up in your neck of the woods.
Oh, really?
Hmm.
Yeah. It's like some people, like, I don't know what the exchange, I don't know the exact exchange rate over up there in Canada for our US dollar to you guys, but I think I purchased one of the figures. I forgot which one.
On Canadian Amazon, they're each about 30. The cheapest is 35, which is Magneto.
Yeah.
The most expensive is about 45, 46 per figure.
Yeah. And it's funny because Wolverine and Rogue are damn near sold out. Like you go on the Hasbro website, you go on Amazon, you go on everywhere, and they're either sold out or they hike the price up like really high.
Oh, yeah. The Executioner is fucking
cool. Look at that glorious storm, though. Yeah. Executioner's cool, too.
Yeah. Actually, with the storm, though, if you look at the lightning effects, those were actually from the previous model from the VHS line that was like based on the original 90s one.
Right.
Yeah.
Because the new one didn't come with any type of accessories. And I was like, this is stupid. So I was like, okay, I already got like three storms in handy and some extra lightning effects.
A custom Cyclops beam and Jubilee fireworks too?
Actually, no. The Cyclops one, the beam comes with the figure because that one came out earlier.
That's a sweet beam.
Yeah,
that's a sweet beam.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the line. The Executioner in that line looks really cool.
Yeah,
that's pretty sweet.
Yep. I have all of them except for the Executioner. I still have a personal grudge against him for what he did to my queen.
Oh come on!
No, me it's too. Be undone and he's, in like and he's a friend of the show.
It'll be undone. You know,
I'm quite conflicted.
It'll be fixed.
Show's done. I can't watch this anymore.
I'm out. No more.
Yeah, it's a wrap. Well,
it's a wrap. That was beautiful, man. Cool collection.
Thank you.
Can't keep our queen down.
I like that the Goblin Queen one comes with a little like bundled up Nathaniel Summers baby.
Yeah.
Nathan Summers.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was spoiler. Well, it's a toy, isn't it?
And that one.
Previously on X-Men.
Oh, so go ahead.
No, I was saying the Goblin Queen, that one is hard to stand up on its own because she's wearing these crazy high
heels. Let's say she's evil. The heels get higher the more evil you are.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and she's
When you're evil, you get incredible balance as a trade-off for your morality.
True. That's right. And when I do the size like articulation next to Jean Grey, she hovers over her. She's like super tall.
Oh, really?
Who's tall?
Considering the same person.
Oh, Goblin Queen.
I mean, the boots definitely are the...
The boots, yeah.
Boots.
Storm super tall. She should be pretty big figure.
Yeah.
But yeah. So, where was I? Previously on X-Men.
Previously on X-Men.
Let's hit it again. All right, where did we leave off last time? Because this is always super relevant.
Trapped here, haunted, suffering, despairing. I feast on misery, and I, the adversary, shall not waste my meal.
Do we discuss that that voice is obviously Storm's voice, but changed?
Of course.
I was wondering. Is it really?
Yeah, you can obviously. I don't know. I don't think I noticed it before, but I definitely noticed it now. It's 100% her voice.
No, we thought during our episode last week, we speculated that it was some other actor.
Maybe it sounded better this time, but it definitely sounds like her voice altered.
Yeah.
Because you looked at somebody's IMDb and you're like,
oh, now I think it's just her voice altered and she did something else.
Yeah, they probably ran it through one of those like auto-tune thingamajiggers or like
a well, she's like Kanye West in it.
It sounds really good.
In the night, I feel
like Ryan says it's Allison. I'll take Ryan's word for it.
Oh, don't believe me, but Ryan comes in, you'd buy him. Me and Hanif don't matter, but old Ryan Jablonski apparently is.
I tried saying it last week. Some might say.
Look, Ryan Jablonski is a man of high moral caliber.
Oh, what are we, scumbags? You hear it, Hanif? I mean, you hear what he thinks of us? Nothing but grade A scumbags.
Are hiding your chins beneath beards. Nothing. Nothing can be trusted.
Yeah, but you're hiding your head. Yeah, you're hiding your chin and your head beneath hair. So you know we have less to hide than you do, my friend.
I don't know about you, but I'm a mall baby who likes chili fries.
Exactly.
I too am a baby of the mall variety. It's the basicest way to say that.
It was a pre-record last week, but we're back and it's good to be back live. I much prefer it this way, but you know, Andre had to go to see some sunny climes.
Yeah, and every once in a while, because we all have real lives, one of us might have to do something. So if that's the case,
we can
alter our format to accommodate because, you know, we're not beholden to the algorithm, right, Davin?
No, not the algorithm. I said we're beholden to the ex-goons.
Uh-huh. Well, they can still enjoy an episode they can't comment on once every once in a while.
And I hope they did. I hope they did.
I hope they would appreciate that we all have lives we like to live sometimes. But we are very happy to be here. And they do not, sir. Fuck you. Do the show 24/7. Don't pay your bills and don't enjoy your life. I mean, enjoy the show, but don't enjoy anything else.
Ryan hopes it was a great trip.
It was. I had a really good time.
Yeah. Hmm.
Davin didn't bother asking about it, as you'll notice, because you know he doesn't care about me or my life.
And remarkably, didn't suntan at all.
I did, actually.
It's actually quite shocking.
I did, actually. I'm like, going on over here. I'm a slightly darker. I burned I did wear sunscreen because, you know, I'm pale. But, yeah, it was fun. I had a really good time.
I'm a landscaper. I haven't worn sunscreen in, like, 20 years.
But we should. That skin cancer will get you, buddy.
Wow.
Hope not. But
I also got a new tattoo.
I don't burn, so it's not like I'm getting sunburned.
Ooh, that's fancy.
Oh, I'd love that, actually. It's very nice.
It's a tattoo. Yeah, it's an honor of the cat that died. Well, the other cat that died after Presley, the one in the front.
Died or abducted by aliens?
Well, I'd like to think that.
No one knows.
I'd like to think he went back to his home planet. Although I did see him die, I'm hoping that maybe a spirit went back to its home planet. So.
You know what they say, men are from Mars, women are from Venus, cats are from...
Somewhere better.
Catern.
That's right. Oh, good joy. Yeah, I like that.
All right. Let's get into this episode before I crack more puns.
All right. Well, X-Men 97, Season 1, Episode 5.
All right. Hold on.
Remember it.
Okay. Go.
Okay. Well, we get some new additional scenes added to the intro, as we see before, including one of Cable fighting Apocalypse, which looks very cool.
From Beyond Good and Evil.
Yes, which I love seeing these sort of reimagined in the modern style scenes from the old series. It's pretty cool.
It's beautiful. I love the art, the animation, and just like them like just remastering it.
Yeah, we get Jean as the Phoenix. A little more of that, I think.
Yeah,
of her kind of exploding out. We get the basketball scene with Rogue and her in the kiss. We get some of the Morlock scene. I mean, obviously, if you're paying attention, these added scenes kind of give you some nod as to how important some of these figures are going to be in the coming episode. Because, like, obviously, Cable now being in it means Cable's going to show up. Also, seeing Callisto briefly with a fighting Storm with a which looks very much like Darth Maul's lightsaber in this particular version, which I know we commented about before. Obviously, means she's going to be relevant again. We did get the Genosha scene with Nightcrawler and Gambit fighting, which is pretty cool.
I feel like some of these scenes might be like, you know how like in Rick and Morty, they always in the opening they always tease like
clips some reels, some not reels
in the show, and you're like, wait, where what happened to that one where the big alien is chasing them?
Yeah, I feel like they're gonna have to save that one for the last episode or something, or like Cthulhu's chasing them and they have like a baby Cthulhu. Because they do that. Usually they're all scenes from that season, but then there's a bunch of mixed in that aren't on the show.
Yeah.
So it's kind of fun to try. Sometimes you'll see one that you'll be like, okay, that's definitely not going to be this season, and then it is. So, you know, it's kind of nice that they surprise you that way.
And I like how they kind of keep it relevant of as far as like who's on the roster at the current moment, because you know they removed Storm, they took Bishop out because he's in the future.
Yeah,
and so you're basically with who's left on the team at the moment.
And I like was Storm removed from the credits?
Yeah, she was removed after episode 2.
Shit, I didn't notice that. Crazy.
Yep. Yeah,
disrespectful.
And I almost rioted.
Yeah. She's coming back.
Seriously,
come on. They're not gonna. I mean, you know, Disney's trying to, appeal to the old fans and also pick a lot of boxes when it comes to the classic characters with the new, and also representing all kinds of people. So I don't think they're gonna give her to Storm. Yeah. Come on.
Well, I've also read the comics and know that there's a Life Death Part 2 coming, so I'm not...
Well, yeah, 100%. You think that's the end of her story? We never see Storm again after the cliffhanger at the end of the last episode? That's it?
She's just confronted by the adversary. She was killed by the adversary thing went?
Yeah, she just killed by the adversary off-panel. We never see her again. Oh, so long, Storm. You shall be missed.
Yeah, she would.
Well, we see return of Trish Tilby.
Trish Tilby.
I didn't realize she was in the original series. I was just watching Graduation Day with my brother to catch him up to speed, and I saw Trish in the beginning. I was like, oh, she was there.
She's been peppered a little bit throughout the series, but here and there. But we really made fun of one time. She's like, I'm Trish Tilby. It's almost like the way Matt Berry talks on What We Do in the Shadows. You know, like,
which is amazing.
This is how we talk in Arizona. So we see that which we used to always question before. I believe the world knew Professor X was a mutant and that the school had X-Men at it. Davenant and X-Men Dan both disagreed. I think it was X-Men Dan both disagreed with me. Saying
I'm
that
on the fence on that one.
It's obvious this episode.
Oh, well, yeah, like after Gyrick basically outed him and killed him. But I mean, I feel like
Of the last episode. Yeah,
yeah, I feel like certain like Robert Kelly when he was a president and he was working with them in the OG season. I feel like he might have known that Xavier was a mutant, but kept it on the hush hush. I think like certain
I agree.
No, you guys all disagreed that they even knew that the school was where the X-Men were. Like you thought it was Xavier. They didn't even know the mutant. Like the Xavier's a regular human helping out mutants at the school, and it didn't have anything to do.
The general public for sure.
Yeah,
but I agree that like Senator Kelly probably knew. Like anyone who's sending Sentinels after them probably knows who they are.
I mean the way Trilby's talking, it's not a surprise that they're all here. It's just an in depth. It's more of a talk.
There has been a bit of a time lapse.
Yeah, I agree. But I don't know. I feel like it's a pretty big thing to have been revealed.
It is.
But we'll see.
That's really why there's the expose as well, probably because it is this new thing. And it's just like, she even says that to Cyclops. She's like, this is your chance to introduce yourself to the world. So this is like their first attempt.
Yeah, but this is the first time she's got to talk to them about them. Not necessarily they didn't know they were there.
Talking about that would be a pretty narcissistic as a journalist.
No. I meant the first time that the X-Men direct. Or she's interviewing them individually. I do believe the world knew that they were there before. They just never had a one-on-one talk with them. This is the first time they've done that. But anyway, we'll see.
Yeah, I agree.
Doesn't really.
No, I agree with that. I don't think that was like an unveiling of Cyclops.
No, yeah, I agree.
Like it's clear the world even knows that the X-Men have saved their ass more than once at this point. Like, cause he even references it. He's just like, look, we've saved you before. And she doesn't question that. She's just like, what, when? Like it's common knowledge. I think that the X-Men have saved them from like Apocalypse and like other big threats that were probably pretty hard to hide even before cell phones.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, We see Beast being interviewed first. And he's in a lovely little Southern gentleman type outfit, and he blushes, which is cute when she gives him a compliment. And
who blushes too, my dear?
She also mentions where the school is, which I think we've talked about a few times, where she says Westchester, which is in New York State. Yeah. So,
well, we knew that anyway.
Well, you know, when I was a kid, one of the few X-Men or Fox channels I used to get through those rabbit ears was Westchester, New York. So it's kind of a nice.
That was Rochester.
Thank you, Rochester. Very
different. The same one.
There's a Westchester and a Rochester. That's confusing. Americans.
Rochester and Rochester. Yeah.
Yeah.
So well,
we have a Chester and a Colchester.
They're pretty far away, though. They're not in the same community.
Neither is Rochester and Westchester.
Colchester's a county, and Chester's like a place. Ow. Lebowski. So anyway, then we see her interviewing Jubilee, who's talking about how the school was more hands-on.
I actually got that one.
More hands-on learning, you know, but with big death machines and vampire dinosaurs.
Which takes Trilby back a little bit.
You can't tell Jubilee anything, because she's the biggest rat.
I love her.
I love her, but that girl not keep a secret to save her life.
She's like, we almost die on a regular basis, including the children. But we're safe, we promise.
She'd be surprised you were pissed off about it. She'd be like, what? Oh, were we not supposed to talk about that? Like,
they got some B-roll footage of, like, you know, some of the X-Men going about their day-to-day lives, like Cyclops taking off some kind of weird visor, putting on his regular glasses. He shows them playing Batmorphin, Wolverine playing basketball, Jubilee and Sunspot watching a movie. You know, we see some Cyclops, and it's funny how it's like B-roll for a TV show, but it also is cut like an episode of a TV show. Like, we see Beast like being upset that something's not going right with his experiment. We also see like Jean and Scott being very cold to each other. Like,
they're standing on opposite directions in the kitchen.
And they even have a camera from the outside of the window looking in, so you can see her face while she's doing the dishes. Like, which is like she's just standing there doing the dishes, and a documentary guy's going by the window with the camera, and she's not reacting. She's just looking down at the dishes.
So earlier this afternoon, they dropped a promo, and they kind of fashion it like a
swap. Oh, I saw that.
The days of,
you sent me that.
The days of our future past instead of like days of our lives.
Oh, that's cute.
Like, put the sappy music and you have her. She's like, do you love her?
I'll post that on the page tonight. I just wanted to do the episode first.
So Trilby mentions that all of this, the better get to know the X-Men, is on the heels of the fact that the UN is getting prepared to welcome the nation of Genosha into its ranks. I just remembered another X point,
Crazy because, like, I'm actually pretty familiar with those criteria with the whole Ukraine thing and everything in Sweden and everybody trying to get in or getting in lately, and they don't meet the criteria at all. It's just a newly formed nation. Like, newly formed nations don't get into the UN. But
I mean, when you're newly formed.
I'm thinking of NATO.
Oh. I was going to say, newly formed nation consists about a couple million of different, like, mutants with, like, the ability to, like, literally crush a city or, like, shoot beams out of their eyes or...
Well, actually, Davin, what you said is actually incredibly important and relevant to this. It was one of my X points, but I think I got so many I don't need it. We'll get to it when we get to it. But the NATO comment you just made is important for later. So anyway, we see some of the X-Men, Rogue, Magneto, and Gambit. Yeah. On hand, which is obviously the love triangle we got going on right now. So it's fun that we sent them all together.
He volunteered
because of that, probably so. Yes, and we
mentioned it.
Yes, and we see Magneto. You know, Gambit given like some side comments about the trip. Magneto says for him to be careful because if this new Blackbird something happens to her, that Rogue and him can fly and Gambit cannot. So you know, he is relying on them.
Love stating the obvious.
They churned out a new Blackbird pretty quick.
Well, they got Beast on it.
Yeah, and I would imagine. I would imagine like the X Mansion has some kind of like AI technology before. Obviously, this is 97, but I'm sure Beast came up with
the
something.
The Danger Room.
Yeah, I mean the Danger Room can self-repair itself. Why I don't see why the X.
I say all of their technology is far ahead of even standards we have today. They like the cops have
laser technology. A lot of it.
The cops have laser guns. I mean, I think this world is slightly different.
True, the world is slightly different.
So
they were forced to have laser guns by the censors.
I know, but they still have them. This world is, whatever reason they do or don't, this is not our world. It is a different world. It is similar but different.
Or even like
there's also mutants there.
Or even like Dr. Cooper and like his or their government contacts probably like shelled out a new one for them because you know since they're working so close together. But I'm still on the they have technology at the mansion that can literally self-repair Blackbird.
Well, they mentioned it's a new one, so I'm guessing the old one remains destroyed.
Yeah.
Well, there wasn't much left of that.
So as they land, we get to see this lovely nation of Genosha, including giant statues of Magneto and Professor X at the gates, which are very nice. Mm-hmm. We get a ton of cameos of various X-Men throughout the years, which we can
look at that. Oh, that's an exciting one. There's a couple of exciting Leech, ones.
We got Glob, Herman, and Pixie there, I think. Is that Pixie?
Yep. Pixie, yep.
I don't know. I'm
not sure who that taller person is.
It might be Angel, but I'm not sure.
Not Angel. Maybe
I actually have a list of every single
one. So do I, actually, too, but we can...
Oh, really?
Can save that for a little later. But we see, like, you know, obviously all the advertising is meant towards mutants. You know, they have, like, people, beauty places that are talking about nails and scales and horns. So it's not just about the normal stuff.
$14 bananas or some shit like that. Like, the prices are pretty steep.
Well, that is why I was good. That was going to be one of my X points, which I will talk about now because I think I have enough. So you mentioned NATO, the North American Trade Organization, which they can't be into as a new nation.
Treaty organization.
But because of that and other things like that, that limits your trade with other nations if you're an establishing one. I just came from Cuba where they have a real problem with getting some items because they have a trade embargo with the United States. Yeah. And their biggest trade partner is Russia, who obviously is at war and having issues of their own right now. So, you know, the fact that that's why things are pricey. They don't have all the trade stuff set up yet because they are a new nation.
Yeah.
So it's funny that you mentioned that because that's what a point I was going to make later.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
So we see all kinds of fun stuff. We see like mutants using their powers to make ice cream for like Leech.
So I heard a rumor. Somebody said that could be Bobby Drake.
It does kind of look like him, actually.
Yeah, it really does. Yeah. And I was like, that's something that he would do. He'd be like the.
That's something he would do. But he can't make ice cream.
I don't know if the Bobby Drake.
He can make a snow cone.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's funny. I saw a meme about that recently, which I don't want to get too far into that since we're talking about this episode. But about that episode, the Cold Comfort episode, where they're like, how like Polaris was the most extra of a girlfriend you possibly could have. Instead of just breaking up with him, she fakes her kidnapping and like makes it look like she's been like messes up the apartment and disappears. Like instead of just having a conversation and breaking up with him, which I didn't think about when we did that episode.
I liked that episode, but Dave Cutler hated that episode. Remember, we had him on that episode and he was just like, this is the worst.
it's pretty dumb. I mean, if you think about it too much, it was really, I think we were just happy to see the X Factor characters and all that.
I was, yeah.
Yeah. I definitely was. I still go back to that episode. It's very fire.
Yeah, it is fun. Yeah. And I like seeing a nod to that in the last episode, too. So we see all kinds of mutants living their best
lives. Well, speaking of which, we see Madrox.
We do. We also see Nate.
I can't believe Exodus is doing a dance number. Exodus is there doing a dance number.
We see Nature Girl. I was just happy seeing Glob Herman. I was pretty happy about that.
Me too.
But we see them landing in and kind of seeing this world and how beautiful it is with all the mutants and walking around, and there's all these posters that are pro Magneto, pro Xavier, and just a beautiful, idealistic, futuristic looking town that's
Wakanda music.
Unity.
So they're greeted when they leave the Blackbird by Madeline Pryor, who's been invited to be
my guy.
You're getting ahead of me, but yes.
All right, the Madeline Pryor. I got you.
Luckily, you guys could spare a gene.
How convenient is that?
You got extra jeans.
Yeah, extra jeans.
So, Val Cooper.
Good question, Serenity Q26. Where was iBoy? I'm also an iBoy fan. iBoy's a fun character.
No, you know. You don't have Quentin Quire either, and some of the other characters that popped up in Glob Herman did, so. And this is the point where Magneto says that Gambit insisted on coming when he heard Rogue agreed to accompany him. So this is where we get that little fun nod. So then, of course, they're greeted, of course, by Nightcrawler, who who is there. Once again, voiced by friend of the show, Adrian Huff.
And it's so good. This, I even sent, I was
his accent, to Aid about his accent it. Seems more playful and deeper than it was before.
It's perfect.
Yeah,
it's
because perfect. Well, this is the first time we actually seen Nightcrawler actually not like in fear of his life or like going on some exotic mystery to find his mother. He's actually like living his best life.
Yeah, I agree. He seems very more, a lot more playful, which is the kind of Magneto or the kind of Nightcrawler that I like to see. So
yeah,
it's like when Nightcrawler was Spider-Man briefly in the comics, like that fun time.
Yeah.
It's best. I was talking to Aid about it. I told him it's the best portrayal of Nightcrawler there's ever been. It's perfect. It nails the, he goes from being jovial and fun to like wise and like imparting wisdom.
He also seems younger. He also seems amazing. Like more sprightly and more full of life, which is
yeah, nice. He looks yeah. shorter.
Which is Nightcrawler. They make him way shorter.
They make him way shorter and way younger looking. He had a lot more lines in his face before.
According to the Marvel stats, I think him and Rogue are like the same height, like around 5'8", 5'9".
Yeah. So they make him way shorter.
Him kind of like as short as Wolverine.
Yeah.
He also
Interesting choice.
He also acknowledges that he is there to help the different religious groups get along and connect in this new island nation that they're creating. So he's sort of a religious envoy, if you will, of that, which is fun.
Rogue drove me nuts with her pronunciation of his name, Kurt Wagner.
Yeah, well, hey Wagner, but it's like I think that's
country.
It's like a southern thing.
I give her the benefit of the doubt, but as somebody who, you know, has encounters with like folks from all over the world and, you know, and about like certain pronunciation and enunciations, I was like, can you please say Wagner, not Wagner?
Well, I mean, the very famous Russian or German composers is pronounced Wagner.
Wagner, yeah.
Yeah.
But it
was somewhat problematic in our modern world because of his connections to Nazism. But aside from that, he did Flight of the Valkyries. But, you know, in the famous film director, Wim Wenders, who is Wim Wenders, if you pronounce it that way. Mm. So, you know, you got to keep that in mind.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we get some fun little nods to like how great this little mutant society is. Like you see kids playing, one falls in the water and then like a water mutant comes out and pushes her back out.
And Leech was kind of like a low key MVP. Cause he was kind of like all over this episode.
He's just wandering everywhere. Every time they see the kids wandering.
It was so adorable watching him like, cause he walked by like Rogue and then he looked back and noticed that and his face lit up.
Yeah.
And then Pixie had to go take him away.
Well, I thought he didn't look that happy. I thought he looked distrustful.
No. Ooh,
when he saw Rogue a little bit. Yeah, he walked by and he noticed her, but he didn't seem like, I don't know.
Oh, no. Like, you actually have to, he paused for a second and then his face like lit up with so much joy.
Okay. Because there's I guess so, because he actually does believe in the X-Men. But there's a line later that is even more tragic when it comes to this, but.
Yeah.
We see Rogue says, "Oh my God.
Everything around us would not have been possible without the work of the X-Men."
We see her say, "Oh my God, he was right. Like, this is what he wanted." And then Gambit catches her saying that. And then she covers when it was Magneto that she was referencing, but she says Charles. Because, you know, she's trying to save Gambit's feelings from what's going on with her. And Magnus, or Eric, I guess now. And we see...
Someone calls him Magnus in this episode, though.
Actually, he is Magnus, isn't he? No, they call him Eric in this.
Yeah,
Rogue calls him Eric.
Didn't Moira call him?
Is his last name Magnus in this show?
It's his middle name.
Lenscher.
Eric Magnus Lenscher.
Was it Lenscher in the show before?
Yeah, it was on.
They never talked about it. I don't think in the show.
Yeah, they had whatchamacallit. When it was the Sanctuary Part 2, when Professor X had like the memorial for Magneto passing, and he said his full name.
Okay.
After he was ejected from the asteroid.
Okay. Well, maybe he goes by Magnus sometimes. Maybe you know, this is where Gambit notices that apples are $10 each. Where he makes a comment about how
pricey. Be right back. You guys keep going.
Daddy's charging. Daddy's charging high rent high.
Yeah, and he mentioned
which circles back to your point about the NATO and trade and stuff like that. So, like, newly nation, fresh out of the gate.
Yeah, Absolutely. And we see some mutants dancing, which is a mutant I don't recognize, the yellow headband in Exodus. But there's like a concert going on with Dazzler performing.
Dazzler.
You know, so we're getting all kinds of fun stuff there. Nightcrawler catches Gambit watching Rogue enjoying herself and dancing, and he suggests that it's obvious to everybody that he loves her and that he should, you know. Gambit says that his type isn't one, you know, that should be love, and Nightcrawler convinces him that, you know, it's love is important. Love is very important for everybody.
There's no love without sin. Exactly. There's only love in what you forgive. And I was like, bars.
Yeah, that was a really good line.
It's one of those things. It's like, regardless of your like personal beliefs, whether you're religious or not, like, you can't deny that Nightcrawler always like came through with the fire, like words of advice or words of like the things that would just touch your soul, even if you think you don't have one.
Oh, 100%. He even says, that Nightcrawler says, there's no love without sin. Yeah, that is a great line.
And it was a great line.
And he convinces him that. And you see Gambit rethinking this idea that maybe he's not too broken to be loved.
It warms my heart to see Nightcrawler so like approving of Gambit wifing his sister.
Right. Yeah. Somebody just commented yellow headband with Cypher, who makes sense.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Cypher.
Right.
The female Cypher. Who's the female Cypher? Oh, from the Young X-Men. Interesting.
We do see cut back to Trilby interviewing the X-Men. She's talking to Cyclops, who's giving a kind of canned answer about being the leader of the X-Men. And then she mentions that his glasses are giving off a glare, and if he can take them off, and he says he can't.
Oh, that was the camera guy in the background. He's like,
"Yeah,
those glasses off to cause a glare." Yeah. He's like, "I can't."
Can't.
And then, of course, Trilby brings up his relationship with Jean.
Marvel Girl,
which he references, and asks when he knew she was the one, and he has some.
I think, is that the first time they ever referred to her as Marvel Girl?
I think they may have in the past. Really, never.
I don't know if they have in this series.
I know she was wearing it when during the Dark Phoenix saga, but I don't recall actually hearing them say Marvel Girl per se.
Yeah, and then we cut to one of the most fan pleasing and also fun parts of this episode is when Jean is like contemplating what's going on, going through her own memories underneath the lake, using her psychic powers to keep the lake away from her, which is kind of a fun little nod, I guess, to X2 maybe, where she's like using like repelling the water and underneath it, like how she was crushed at the end of X-Men 2.
Ha. Supposedly. take that Jean hater, she's not passing out.
That's right.
Not once in this series yet.
Well, not her, but I don't know about Madeline.
She was in a coma for years, so in a way, she was passed out for a long time. I'm kidding. So anyway, Wolverine is going to talk to her. She says she's trying to work through her psychic powers to go through her old memories and come up with them. And she mentions that some of the faces, putting the faces to the memories. And Wolverine has that line that you played earlier about this busted face and changed 100 years.
Yeah.
And, she, you can see her trying to remember everything, but having trouble with it, and Cyclops and this and that. At the same time, we kind of cutting back and forth, where Cyclops is talking to Wendy.
I gave him up because you can't say thank you, because I have to stomach your questions and prove that I'm a person.
Well, damn,
infinitely further than where we're at, but thank you, Dad.
Whoops.
Do you even listen to what I say? Like, do you just hear me say Cyclops and think I have the Cyclops can part? Because I didn't even get to that part yet.
That's a pretty good summation, yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay, so just you look for keywords then. I'll stop saying
mug changed in 100 years, and you know it.
You know this busted mug hasn't changed in 100 years, Andre.
So we hear Cyclops talk about how him and Jean met, and how she, when they were young kids at the school, and, their connection at a young age and all that sort of stuff. And she was going to the memories. Logan suggests that she keep on moving and don't get tied up in past memories, because that's a trap that'll pull you back, because he's gone through that a lot, trying to find his own memories and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So Wolverine says that there's only ever going to be one of her to him. And then she kisses him, which is a huge thing for the show.
That was out of nowhere. Yeah. That was out of nowhere.
And you can see, actually, it's cute. There's some really nice animation digs to this, because when he says that, you see her blush. They add the color to her cheeks right there, which is really nice. And then she kisses him. Wolverine, of course, opens his eyes and says that she just got confused for a minute to go back to Scott.
Yeah, so they kind of actually tease it a little bit on Fire Made Flesh when she was
when he goes through
helping her regain her her memories, and he was like, "Go deeper," and he's like, "You mean that much? I mean that much to you?" And he's like,
"More, even more." Yeah. So yeah, agreed, and that's probably a lingering thing that's going on here as well, which is something that. He said, "You're with Scott. I'm alone. Those are the rules." So it's almost like this is how life has been for him, and he can't accept that it's going to be different.
I mean, I applaud his maturity, his growth.
I agree. That's why I said Wolverine's growth in the first season to accepting Scott and Jean being together was one of my favorite arcs of that whole series, of the whole series. So by the end of it, you know, he doesn't like it, but he realizes that he's got to be the bigger person, or not bigger person. It's like they're causing trouble.
I mean, he was still doing a little bit of like bitch ass, like
for sure.
When after the baby was born, he left those claw marks on the door in the hospital room, and I was like, "Oh gosh, let it go, dog."
Well, you know, love's hard to let go, but it sounds like he might have a chance now. So who knows?
Mm-hmm.
We'll see.
Yeah.
So we see Trobe bring up the fact that they had a baby, because there's records that there was a baby born at the hospital. First he says they don't have a child, then she says, "Well, there are records," and then he admits the doctor wouldn't deliver the baby because they're different.
Which is funny, because I'm surprised the doctor didn't like sue them for like
they probably mind wiped him or something.
Or just drained him of his energy and like left him kind of in a coma a little bit. That's like borderline assault right there.
Yeah. And then she pushes harder, and he says the reason I didn't tell you that he's not here is because you're normal, and that you'll never understand because of my abilities, that like the things we have to go through and all this sort of stuff. She probes, pushed him to the point where he kind of has a bit of a breakdown, where he says that, like, you know, I have the quote. Do you have the quote here, Davin? Or is there more than just what you played earlier, the whole Cyclops losing it?
Oh, I think that's all I got about Cyclops losing it. Yeah.
All right.
The only reason
that's a good one. So I guess to prove he's, well, he just walks out after that, doesn't he? He doesn't say anymore.
No, he has a whole thing about you're ungrateful.
Yeah,
we fight and risk our lives.
The only reason you guys are still alive is because of us, or something like that.
Yeah, that was great stuff. The best part too. He's just like, the truth is, we're nothing like you, and it's a good thing because you'd all be dead. And it's just like,
yeah, he says, "I have to sit here and stomach your asinine questions to prove to you and everyone watching that I'm a person." You know, like you need to see this for you to even, like, you wouldn't just believe that I'm a person unless you have to see this, you know? And he's got a good point. He's got a really good point.
Wolverine and Gambit are so mature when it comes to relationships. Like, can't relate, Serenity Q26. I'd be bickering like Scott and Jean. Very funny.
And he says, "The truth is, we're not like you. Thank God, it's the only reason you people are still alive. Like that, because we're not like you is why we're able to save you all." So, some great moment. Then he walks out of the interview, you know. So, then we get an insight into the ruling class of Genosha, the Council, which is basically
just the Hellfire Club.
There's more. There's Sebastian Shaw. There's Kalisto. There's
Kalisto is in the Hellfire Club.
Sean and Moira.
Not in the show. She wasn't. We're dealing with show continuity, Devin.
I know.
Madeline Pryor. We got Moira McTaggart. Moira. And Banshee. Yeah.
It's like a representation of all the different walks in life. And I want to save that for my X point, because I have a really interesting take on that council.
Sure.
Members.
Okay.
White Queen is one is there as well.
Yeah.
But like Gambit's right to not trust this place. If you look at that council, it's like it's the Hellfire Club and they're trying to court Magneto. It's like, okay, that's who's leading the mutant nation.
It's not just the Hellfire Club. I mean, you got, like I said, you got Moira McTaggart and Sean Cassidy or Banshee.
Magneto
and Madeline Pryor. So you got some walkers of light. In on the council a little bit.
Madeline Pryor's the Goblin Queen.
She saw the light.
She distanced herself from the goblins of her past.
Okay. It's kind of interesting that like these guys were really big bad guys in a couple episodes, so now they're just like cool with them running.
That's what I'm saying. It's like the Hellfire Club. They kidnapped Jean and tried to make like destroy the world with her. Like,
yeah, but this is
maybe they blame that all on Weingard, but
yeah, that really was like Weingard's doing.
And they mentioned that,
but in reality, they're just the richest mutants, and they would rise to the top because of their wealth in the real world. So it's actually quite realistic that they're there.
Yeah,
they have some nice effects.
In all honesty, the Hellfire Club, I think they really just are minding their business, and like they're just trying to
make money,
progress their club or whatever. I mean, it just so happens that they do it off the backs of like powerful mutants.
So nice moments here. Magneto admits that you know, they want him to be on the council with them almost as a leader. He says the whole thing about how he remembers Charles and how Charles wanted him to carry on his dream, and you know, he has a nice speech about that and trying to accept that, and in honor of Charles he's thinking about, you know, doing this. We have a nice moment where it's kind of like you see a glass because they're all drinking some liquid out of these glasses that's full of ice. And when he's talking, you see it break into smaller pieces, which is nice.
The attention to detail is nuts. I was like, it almost felt like very Tarantino like, where you know how he focuses on the little minute thing. You think like,
well, the show has proven that the little details matter, and that's something I'm going to bring up later too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you know, because the whole Jean Grey hair ponytail thing and like stuff like that all, if you're paying attention and you thought about that, you would have, you know, figured it some stuff out.
Oh, what was that? What was that little shady remark that Emma made against Moira? It's like, what charitable act was it that we
allowed a human on the council? Yeah,
I love her. She's so shady, but I love it.
So snarky. She gets Val Cooper with a good line later.
Oh yeah.
Emma's pretty great in this episode. I hope we see more of her.
So we see Rogue freaking out at Magneto because he wants her to be his queen and join him on this, which is why he said he'll do it if she comes with him, basically. She doesn't necessarily know how to feel about that, basically. He reaches out and says, like,
she's trying to knock him all the way to the North Pole.
That's right.
Yeah.
And then we cut to Scott talking to what we believe is Jean Grey about his feelings about the interview and everything that happened. And tries to get him to calm, she tries to get him to calm down by describing her memories of Nathaniel, or Nate. Do they just call him Nathan, or they say Nathaniel?
I think they just say. I think it's Nathaniel and like the full
name, but they call him Nathan Charles Summers.
Nathan or Nate.
Yeah. So he's Nate's like X-Man. You know, he has a different version depending on what timeline we're getting our X-Man from.
Yeah.
Sometimes they're Gray, sometimes they're a Summers.
So then, you know, while he's talking about their son, they kiss, and then they're interrupted by the real Jean Grey. And this is a psychic projection, apparently, between Madeline Pryor and Cyclops.
Mm-hmm.
And Jean
confronts
them for having a astral plane affair, I guess.
A bit of a dalliance.
I guess they're sharing their psychic rapport that Jean thought was sacred between her and Scott.
Yes. Well, also the fact that he's just like kissing this other woman, even if it's in his mind, is still. Madeline gets, which is funny, Madeline can multitask because she's in the middle of this meeting with like the heads of Genosha while she's doing this.
Yeah, really.
So then she snaps out of it back
in Cyclops.
She snaps out of it back into the meeting, and they ask her something's wrong. She says, "Sorry, your mind drifted for a bit."
And Emma,
and then Emma makes a little nod like she might know what's going on, which is funny.
She wants in on the action.
Well, it's kind of funny because the initial comics that instigated this, which it instigated a lot more of this episode later, are you know, Scott's doing this with her instead of Jean, and Jean finds out. So, you know, it's kind of like a fun little nod to that.
MZ makes a funny point.
What do you say?
Jean kisses Logan, probes Cyclops' mind, and still gets angry at him.
Yeah. Well, basically, Scott, Wolverine told her to go check in with Scott, so she goes to, and that's when she sees this.
Yeah, it's true.
And maybe this could be the thing that unites them again later if they're going to rectify their relationship, but who knows?
Yeah.
And then she asks how long it's been happening. He says since Nathan went away, basically, about a month.
Psychic voyeur.
Emma too. Emma smiles like she knows what was going on the whole time. She's just like, "Oh yeah, my mind was just elsewhere." And
like, Emma's just like, mm-hmm.
It sure was.
Cyclops says that she's like, since you know that he built this life with this other gene, and this in like a lot of the things that this that she has, like the way she's treating it, it seems like she doesn't love him, just the memory of him. Because the him he is now isn't necessarily the him that she's in love with. Because she may have missed a lot of growth and a lot of who he is now, which is, you know, obviously a troubling thought. But then it's interrupted by a psychic flash or something horrible happening, and then we cut to what's about to. So it's kind of a little advanced in time, I think, and then back a hair. In which we see the horrible thing about to happen, which is Gambit.
Did I miss this conversation when I was...
That's happening right now. We see Gambit getting ready to go out. And then Rogue coming in to talk to him. Do you have some dialogue here that you want to play? Because now would be the time to do it.
You light up everything you touch, but never me.
Which means he can't give her an orgasm. No, I'm just kidding. kind of.
I mean, that's not wrong. Yeah,
it's a pleasant way of saying that, actually.
It's just not the whole story.
Yeah. Well, basically, she tells him the whole backstory with Magneto we've been waiting for, which is when her... Which I'm going to make an X point about later, but when her mother Mystique was trying to help her learn about her powers, she introduced her to Magneto, who, and they had a connection. He seemed so worldly and knew so much about all these things about mutant stuff. And
apparently not the guy you want to introduce your young daughter to.
A lot of people are accusing Magneto of grooming because of this episode, which is interesting.
Bodemile actually
said no. Yeah, I know. I got that.
She was in her 20s, which I was like, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, but Magneto was just in his, 40s?
no, he's like 40 years older than her.
When was the Holocaust? Like,
he was born in the 30s.
I don't think in the continuity of the show he was in World War II.
So what was he?
They acknowledged when they talked about how they met that in his country there was some kind of a war, whatever country he's from. They never say World War II. They never say that he's a Jew specifically, although it is heavily implied in this in this episode. But the country he's in could be a German country, could be something related to that. I don't know.
Said never again in the old series. Yeah. He's like, never again.
But it does say there's some kind of internal war in the country he's from, which robbed them, you know, which they never say is World War II. So he could be younger than we expect. But, you know, he definitely, because at this point, say he was a teenager in the 40s, he would have been in the 90s. It would have been, you know, 50 years later. So roughly, so he would definitely be like 60s, no, 65. Maybe he ages differently, but I don't think he's supposed to be that old in this show. But that's just, basically, she tells him the whole story, and then how, you know, because of Magneto's abilities, they're able to touch, and his magnetic powers protected them, and that's, you know, they had a relationship back then. But then when she connected with the X-Men, he encouraged her to go be with them, because the way she saw the world was more closer to what they did than what he did. So, you know, there's, he's tenderness there, you know, he's saying like, you'll fly higher with them than you will with me. You'll get to be yourself more than you will with me. And then, Gambit basically tells her his feelings for, and that he loves her. And she says that she can't touch him, you know, and he says that there's more to love.
There are things that are deeper.
Very dramatic scene.
Deeper than skin, he says.
And did you notice the last card that he threw into the fire?
Oh, no, I did not.
Queen of Hearts, wasn't it?
Queen of Hearts.
Yeah, nice. He's throwing cards in the
fire. And that's the second time they've referenced that, because, I mean, obviously in the first episode when Gambit kind of like was hot, peeking around the corner and saw Rogue leave the room, he dropped the Queen of Hearts card.
Right. we see this beautiful ceremony. This beautiful ceremony introducing all of this stuff with music and everyone dancing and all these beautiful.
Oh, wait. You forgot the important part. They, Gambit basically said, like, you know, we'll be friends.
Yeah, that's it. But you can tell he's broken up about it, and so is Rogue.
Did they say that? C-Jack says that they said his magnetism slows down his aging. Did they say that in this show?
I don't remember seeing that.
I don't recall that. That's like a deep cut Marvel fact. I personally don't know that.
I don't think it's ever been referenced on the show.
No, in the comics, he got his age got reset. He was a baby for a while again.
And right.
Then when they brought him back from being a baby, he was youthful.
baby
Magneto. It might have enhanced like his natural like abilities, like maybe added more muscle mass.
How far can magnetism go? Stronger. He's stronger. He's not old anymore. He can touch people that he shouldn't be able to touch. He can, you know, he can make electromagnetic stuff now. Like in this show, they established that. Yeah. And there's all this other stuff.
For a long time.
He can really do everything. So we get
Omega level threat.
We get a who's who gallery of mutants here. We see Angel very briefly. I think it's Angel flying. It might be someone else, but looks relatively like him.
I think it was. I think it was Archangel because
yeah, I think so too.
He's got metal wings.
He's wearing a white suit.
Yeah,
you see that Gil guy whose name I don't remember. He's like a fish dude.
Oh, Squid Boy. Oh,
Gil, oh geez,
Squid Boy.
What was it? I definitely saw Squid Boy.
He's got like a fin on his head.
Yeah, that's
kind of Squid a fish
Boy.
Mouth.
That's okay. Squid
yeah,
Boy.
He's awesome.
He actually made an appearance in Wolverine and the X-Men. He actually played like a really like pivotal role as far as like being rescued by Nightcrawler.
And he was buddies with Juggernaut. They were like real good buddies for a while.
In the background, we see Moira and Banshee like drinking together. And Banshee's like suit even apes his costume. It's got baggy things that hang down the back, which is kind of funny. Gambit's drinking his sorrows away. He's approached by Madeline. You know, she says something about, you know, what's getting at him. And he says not enough drink to drown what he's feeling. And we see Magneto greeting some of the other people from the council.
What? Iska was there in this scene? Iska the Unbeaten was in this scene.
Oh, probably. Oh, there's a ton of people in the
background.
There's
a rockin' mutants in this? That's amazing. She's from Morocco. That's like another dimension. Or like, it's not around here. That's
great.
We
see Val Cooper approach them saying that she is, seems kind of off put by what's going on. They suggest that perhaps she doesn't like their choice of leader. Then he says that that maybe it'll change her mind if an X-Man is his queen and acknowledges the Rogue.
Wait, we gotta highlight the line that she said. She was like, what was it? Most countries don't let terrorists be leaders.
Oh, I got that. I got that.
No, that's a great line.
Most other nations don't allow a terrorist to be their leader.
Yet so many allow their leaders to be terrorists.
Boom!
Yeah, I know.
Down.
Yeah. Yeah,
and fantastic. You know, what was even funnier was if you paused it and looked at Sebastian's face, he was just like,
damn.
Please don't.
I just rewatched this episode again.
And Emma was in the background, kind of like putting her head down, like kind of snickering on the low, because she's like, "You got burned."
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh, yeah. Such a good line.
She said something like, "What's wrong, Miss Dr. Cooper? Is it your dress?"
That's
the Emma line. What's wrong? Is it your dress? So funny.
Such Emma's a bitchy so good. Thing. Like it's so funny.
So Emma. Emma says shit like that all the time.
Well, it's meant to listen to response, right?
Yeah.
Magneto says that, you know, perhaps if there's a man ruling alongside him, it'll ease her things. And then he says the Rogue is going to join. Is going to be his queen. And then Val asks, like, what? Or no, he asked Rogue to be his queen. And then she says, what did she say? And seems visibly upset by that, which is the point I'm going to make later.
Yeah.
So then they're interrupted by the arrival of Rogue, who has this beautiful entrance where she floats down, and they have this wonderful dance number together, her and Magneto in front of everybody, where they fly around each other and dance.
I got an X point on that one.
I do too. Is it about the song?
Yes.
No, that's one of mine. I got lots.
Never mind.
We can both talk about it. I got lots.
I'm
a big fan of this band for a lot of reasons. So we have this lovely song, which they dance around. It's a very 90s song, which was a nice choice, too. And we do see her not wearing, take her glove off. And then there's this beautiful scene where their hands touch right between Gambit, who's watching from the floor as the hands touch over him.
Oh, man. Like,
it's so good.
Swimming in the air or like ice skating.
And, you know, we see the magnetic.
There were some of us back in the 90s that said that Ace of Base was going to lead to the death of us all. And they thought we were crazy. They thought we were crazy back then.
Why are you ruining the X point? You notice me and Hanif did not say the name of the band each because we're going to say that for later.
And in all fairness, he didn't say the name of the song or the year.
Okay, so, but it's obviously that you said the band.
We'll give him that.
All right.
They said we were crazy. Well, who's crazy now?
Oh, my God.
Oh, Devin, read the room, buddy. So anyway, he's so happy with that point too. Anywho, we get the whole all these fun dance. We see all these mutants using their powers to dance, which is fun. We see Nightcrawler bopping around the room. We see Multiple Man popping around and dancing with all these different people at once, which is nice. We see the two of them flying, and they do share a kiss. But it does seem very dramatic because basically, just when she kissed him and says, thanks for the kiss, like, she went through all of this, the big dance with Magneto, kisses him, and then says, thanks for the kiss, sugar, but that this is as far as it's going, that someone's right skin, that Gambit was right, some things are deeper than skin, telling him that she's chosen Gambit. So if you're going to choose someone that's going to be the love of your life, what you want to do just before you go, I think we have by now.
That's funny.
Somebody said if you say Sabace three times, they appear. So I hope so. That'd be great. Which is funny because say you're like,
Saw the sign.
They have some bops.
They have some bops, man. Their cover, Cruel Summer is fantastic.
Nice.
It is. And so is this song, actually. Happy Nation is a good song. Whoops.
Just say it. Never mind. Our X point's gone. So they're dancing to the Saurian Eve, but Davin did everything in his power to destroy it from us.
I'm distracted. I have a crying baby upstairs.
Okay. But, anyway. Well, yet I can't go on vacation.
Maybe one of us needs a vacation more than the other.
For sure. Do you see any? This is the reason why it's nice and quiet here. So yes, they're dancing to the song "Happy Nation" by Ace of Base, which is very great for this, and especially a huge precursor as to what's about to come. So, but the thing is too, which I find funny, is it's like there's a love triangle. I'm trying to decide between Davin or Hanif. I don't know what to do. So then suddenly I decide I'm going with Hanif. I'm going to have a dance number and kiss Davin in front of Hanif and then be like, sorry, Davin, it's not going to work out. And then go to Hanif, like, come on. Like, it's very dramatic, but it's great for the scene, actually. I have no, like, this episode, spoiler alert, is a 10. It's so great. So, but they have this,
easy
moment.
10.
She tells him
she smashes the scale.
It's if we could do 20. 11, I would do 11, but.
We can do 11.
No, we can't. We're not doing that. The systems are in place for a reason.
We can't break the system.
The system. So Madeline Pryor gets a bunch of images of different horrible things happening. There's rats. There's something coming out of the ground. There's Jean Grey holding a baby in costume.
The flashback from the first episode.
Blood's coming out of her nose because she senses something horrible is about to happen. And we kind of cut between her and Jean, who's also having the same experience at the X-Mansion. So when this is happening, Rogue tells her that, this is it. I've chosen Gambit. When she's saying that, Madeline is dealing with her bloody nose and kind of staggers out. She is approached by Cable, who appears out of nowhere, who is apparently trying to stop something horrible from happening before his time runs out.
He screams at her to shut the music off.
Shut the music off. It's going to end the world. Ace of Base is going to kill us all. They said we were crazy in the 90s.
The thought of Ace of Base being like the sleeper anthem of Massacre really cracks me up.
Which adds an interesting factor to this movie, this show, is that Gambit or Cable, who says, turn it off, they're coming, you're all going to die. Then
he's coming is what he says, actually.
Does he?
Yeah, he says he's coming. Or like who?
Yeah, we're like who? He's not referring to the Wild Sentinel as he. I can't imagine. So he must be talking about whoever.
Says kill the music. I'm listening to it right now. You have to get everyone out now. He's coming. Yep. Then his cube says slide imminent. He says no. I'm sorry, Mom. Not again. And she recognizes him as Nathan. She can tell by his eyes. She says, "Your eyes. You made it."
It's a beautiful mother's intuition.
It is a beautiful moment. But then he's time slips back. He says, I'm so sorry, Mom, before he slides back in time, which is so tragic.
And then she's like, sorry for what? And then...
Yeah, and then boom, huge explosion.
Green light.
Yeah, it's basically... Like, it's hard to go into all this with, like, explaining too much, but it's basically...
That's an interesting point there, Courtney. Wolverine said it's coming earlier and it's Wolverine, or he's like, is Apocalypse coming? And then Cable just said he's coming. Maybe it's a reference to Apocalypse. Who knows?
But I don't know how Wolverine would know what, or Cable would know what Wolverine said to her then. Anyway, it's basically Saving Private Ryan here, they're all kind of waking up after this massive explosion that decimated the island. Rogue's under a boulder. There's people dead everywhere. We see Magneto coming out of the rubble using his powers. A bunch of people trying to fly to get to safety and getting wiped out. We see Banshee flying with Marrow, who gets incinerated in the air.
Yeah, they both get incinerated. Like, wow. Wow.
Massive explosions left and right. And through the shadow, we see what's doing this. It's this giant sentinel, like a tri-sentinel with the three heads.
That's shooting the Wild Sentinel.
What is it called? The Wild Sentinel in the comics?
It is in the comic, yeah.
Okay.
But it was also called a tri-sentinel, too.
That's what I thought. I thought the tri-sentinel was a different thing. Yeah, it's just a sentinel with three heads. Like a normal sentinel with three heads.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it's not this thing, because this thing isn't really anthropomorphic. It's like a big ball.
It's weird.
With like three heads that shift
between... Like a praying mantis claws.
Is this the way it looked in the Grant Morrison comic? It didn't really have the three heads, I don't think, but it was very similar in design.
It had like a bug looking body.
Yeah, it did. I thought, yeah, which this one kind of did too. So we see them about to be Magneto and Rogue about to be obliterated by and then saved by Nightcrawler, who teleports them out of there. He brings them to a roof where people are gathering after all the destruction that's happening.
Nightcrawler had some blast. He looked like he got injured, but
yeah, he's hurt, but he's alive, but he's hurt. He's lying there. He gets him out, but just barely. Rogue goes to touch him to see if he's okay, and then realizes she can't. She's not wearing gloves.
Wait,
you have something to say?
I think he's looking. He's pouring out the Wild Sentinel.
He can bring it up when he gets to it.
All right.
So they're talking about how many people died, and he says too many. Gambit says so many, and we see a bunch of the bodies. We see Madeline Pryor's dead. We see Sebastian Shaw's dead. We see Moira MacTaggert's dead. We see Squid Boy's dead, the one you mentioned earlier.
No, not Squid Boy.
We see Callisto's dying. We just see her pupil dilate and showing that she's died. It's very, very tragic. And what they do in this episode is insane for playing with the emotions. And also showing like the horror of this sort of war.
Yeah, it's still kind of like a bug.
Yeah, they don't really show a lot of it. So it's similar to the design of this thing is super cool though. And in the movie. So we see Magneto trying to rally the troops to go against this thing and stop it. There's a big Gambit gets on a motorcycle. Rogue flies in. Magneto is trying to distract it to get them closer to it to battle it. We see Gambit really opening up and killing. The point I meant to mention earlier was knowing how this episode ends, it's interesting that they recast. Hey, what are you doing? So my cats are doing something. They recast Gambit.
I thought it was quiet in there, Andre.
It was, for the most part. Yeah. You know what I'm going to do, Davin? Go to bed after this and sleep all through the night.
Yeah, I'm not going to do that. It's not a chance.
I'm happy that you have children and that they fulfill you, but there's a reason why I don't, and that's why. So
you like sleep.
Yeah, well, you know, I like my life as it is. But, you know, if something happened to you tragically and I was forced to raise your children, I wouldn't say no, but I wouldn't be happy about it for a while.
Well, look, am I in a godfather position?
Okay, shit. All right, well, I'll raise her. I might change her names, though.
To Klaatu, Varata, and Nictu.
No, those are my cats' names. I wouldn't do that. Yeah. Your children's names will now be Bebop and Rocksteady.
Oh, my God.
That's pretty good. Well, the second one was, the first one was almost Wolverine.
If I got two cats together in the future, that's the names I want to name them. But I have to fly past my wife first. When we got Sheba, the gray one, which is wandering behind me there, she had two kittens with her, and that's what I called them. But we found a home for them, and I think they renamed them. But anyway, we see these beautiful shots of Gambit. Yeah, so what I was going to say was it's interesting. They recast Gambit. And the voice of Cable is now the voice that Gambit was before, Chris Potter. Because of what happens in this episode, perhaps there's more staying power for one character than another. But we'll see. So
I don't think that's it.
No, maybe not. But I am interested about that shift. I wonder if this had something to do with it, but we'll see. So we do see a big fight between some of the Sentinels that are all seen very with the what's going, like the X-Men encountering the Sentinels. Gambit's using his powers to fuck them all up really beautifully, which is always funny when like they give this big arc for this character. It's like you see Gambit kill like 9 Sentinels at once when like they had a real trouble with one in like the first season, you know, like one or two were real.
They've
tough.
Been training.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Actually, they show that in the opening episodes.
That's fair. They've had years to figure out how to destroy Sentinels more than they did before. Yeah. So
also, are they still made of that like that that material that
plastic? It's not metal. Yeah,
that plastic metal. Because like I would think that would play a big part. Because they were having some trouble in the last Master Mold episode that was in season 4, I think.
Mm. Yeah, Magneto's throwing a lot at them. Like he's not manipulating them itself, he's throwing stuff at them.
Yeah, he
like,
can't,
including a railroad and stuff. So obviously, it's
somebody said that these new Sentinels also have a like a magnetic electromagnetic resistance to it.
No, maybe so.
Yeah, probably
he's not. He can't. It seems like he can't use his powers on them. At one point during the fight, they smash him into Charles' statue, which falls over, crushes a bunch of mutants that are watching.
Some vile Godzilla Sentinel. You go at it, you end up dead.
And we see Magneto dealing with the horror of all the death that's around him, you know, including the smash statue of Charles. We see and some references to people being stuck in a concentration camp there, so maybe they are retconning that he was in the war.
The telltale sign for me was the striped uniforms.
Yeah, and you see they're behind barbed wire too.
Barbed wire and under like the blankets.
But this is when he launches an entire subway chain of cars.
I was like, did people get out of that train? Because how did that suck?
Well, hopefully once this started, you're just going home on the train.
It all of a sudden goes flying at this giant Godzilla Sentinel.
You're like, this is the last time I get on a train. The first time Dr. Octopus fought Spider-Man on it, and this time I get hurled.
I didn't see this coming,
Sentinel.
Though. Where like Rogue wakes up and you like realize it as she realizing it realizes it and you see the wild Sentinel. I'm like, oh my god, this is what's happening now. I should have known because it was Genosha, but I was like, oh my god.
We see
so excited.
Leech, like they're all hiding in an area, and Leech. They also reference that this came up a little earlier. There's a group of Morlocks that were trapped near the Sentinel, and that's why they went in to try to rescue them. We see them all. We see Leech, and he says that he's not going to worry because Magneto told him he didn't have to be scared. I'll never be scared
again. Tommy's like, but Magneto or X-Men are friends to Morlocks.
Yeah. And that makes him look a little sad.
Yeah.
But then
that's
we see.
To say, Tommy.
We see some of the Morlocks. They see Gambit get in there and save them just before they're about to get wiped. And
he's riding
use a scarf.
Riding on the head of a decapitated Sentinel.
Yeah,
it's so badass.
Such a great moment. And then he uses the scarf, which he powers up and like has a whip to blow stuff up, which is super cool. This little fashion scarf. But then the big mutant says the first thing it says, or sorry, the big Sentinel, which is the mega level mutant detected, which is Magneto. And then it shoots its crazy beam at it, which Magneto repels with the Morlocks.
To answer Courtney, she's not the leader anymore because she relinquished that that title to Callisto in the Christmas.
Yeah, in the episode, yeah.
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 Actually, I don't think she did. I think she said Callisto will rule in her stead. So I think she actually is still a leader.
That was the first episode where they encounter them. On the Christmas episode,
she gave leadership back to them.
Because Callisto was like, as leader of the Morlocks, I want to invite the X-Men to our Christmas dinner.
Yep.
Yeah,
Magneto.
Underrated episode, by the way. I watch that every Christmas.
Dave Cutler.
I really did not like that episode.
Andre shits on that one a lot.
Honestly, I didn't like it either.
Honestly, it was when I was younger, I thought the episode was kind of corny. But now that I'm old and soft and pink, I can appreciate the spirit of giving and all that.
Oh, I have no problem with that. It's just the way it's done.
I like the Cyclops singing. Fa la 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 la.
The epic battle between Gambit and Jean over putting spices on your.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, she's so aggressively angry at it. But like, oh, like, yeah. she
throws a broccoli at her, yeah. at him.
Like he killed someone in her family. She's so mad at him. Like
the more we talk about it, the more I like that episode. I actually think maybe it's great.
Yeah.
So maybe next Christmas we'll revisit it and see if it's changed their mind. Yeah. So
with Dave Cutler, we'll bring Dave on.
Magneto is getting hammered by the beam, and he's saving himself and the X-Men, holding out as long as he can. Rogue and Gambit try to run in, and they get pushed back by Magneto, who wants to try to keep her safe. So he wraps them in metal, and she can see through the hole his eyes.
Which really showed me how powerful Magneto really was in this. The fact that he was able to hold a field up and healed Rogue and Gambit at the same time. That's real power.
And the animation too, because you can see real emotion in his eyes when he's looking at her. You can tell he does love her. Yeah. And that's why he's trying to keep her safe. And you can see his eyes soften after he sees that she's safe.
Even Gambit was like, he's trying to save you.
Yeah, he's trying to save you. And then Leech looks up.
Trying to save us, he says.
Leech looks up at Magneto, who's all damaged. She's all bloody and stuff. And he tells him in German, don't be afraid.
How about
So sad, man. So sad.
And then you see the beam break through and then them seemingly incinerate.
This line, though.
We shall not live our days wondering if we could have saved more.
Yeah, it's a great line.
I love that line.
There's such good writing in the show.
I was like, yes!
The writing in the show is so fucking good.
It's so good. It's confirmed Bo DiMaio must murder children on the side or something, because this is so good. He's such a good writer. If he doesn't murder children, I don't know how he got fired.
I'm curious.
It's so good.
Is it just that he had OnlyFans? Is that what it was? I mean, they haven't announced anything yet.
They're not saying anything else.
The whole situation is kind of like reminding me of when Disney fired James Gunn.
Yeah.
And then realized, we might need you for the third one because you're kind of like a genius.
Yeah, yes, we'll see. And he was. And it was stupid they fired him in the first place.
You can mark my words. I think Disney and Marvel will hire Bo DiMaio back.
I think so too, but we'll see.
That would be amazing.
Who cares if he has a fucking OnlyFans? Like, whatever. Adults are the only ones you're supposed to be able to buy those. So
the only other thing I heard is maybe he's a bit of a jerk behind the scenes with the other.
Oh, maybe so. Stuff,
but a guy apparently, that there were some complaints about him on the Witcher show.
A guy that looks as good as he does might have an ego. So like, he's in solid shape and a handsome dude.
And I was looking, I was looking in front of this angle of obviously the writer's strike happened, and he probably couldn't work on anything. So what are you gonna do?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, 100%.
I mean, I personally wouldn't do OnlyFans, but that's just me. But
no, I don't care if people do. I don't care if people are prostitutes, whatever.
Nobody does, but Disney does. But if you sign on with Disney, they're going to be watching.
But it's a morality
clause.
But it's something that's got to shift in our mentality as species. Like, people are sexual beings. If you want to engage in whatever way you want to, it's your body. Do with it what you want. If you're with engaging consenting adults, who cares?
Yeah.
Like, I know it is a kid's show, but hopefully there are things put in place to stop kids from going to OnlyFans and looking at
this. This is definitely not a kid's show.
Well, I know. This is a show for us.
Disney needs a clean house.
Kids will watch it too.
Hire him back. Oh.
I watched this episode with my 3-year-old today. She loved it.
I also do believe that there are a lot. Well, the lights and colors and stuff.
Yeah.
I do honestly believe, though, that there are a lot of genius writers in this world and a lot of ones that really do love this material. So even if they don't get him back, I'm sure they will find someone that will.
I mean, we still have Larry Houston.
Yeah, 100%.
We still got a lot of the writers. They would like a crack at it. I know friends of the show, Bob Skeer, would like a crack at it. Probably Len Yulee would take a crack at it,
Oh, did you see
Brooks
the...
Brooks Wachtel?
I think it was those two. They asked them about directing... X-Men live action, and they're like, and they said they're both of them are up for the challenge. So
that would be awesome, man. They should. If this show is any limit to how great this is, they should.
Kevin Feige really needs to be watching and taking notes, because there's
I'm sure
no
he is. It's all part of the banner.
They have this show as fire as it is, and they can't translate it to
Well, let's get this straight. Fox couldn't translate this to the same thing, because they are really bad at doing certain things.
Yeah, but that's
I have faith that Marvel will do something good with it.
Topher wants a crack.
Oh, Topher.
So we see
Topher. I think this Topher character is a young go-getter. I think we could he'd get in there and really make some change.
Yeah.
So we see Rogue overcome with grief, running at the Sentinel.
He just Gambit. She just smashes that barrier. She's like, fuck that.
Yeah. And then Gambit charges up the motorcycle, ramps it off, and smashes it into her to get her out of the way. To try to protect her himself as well, because he knows that she won't survive the Sentinel.
Literally missed the beam by like a millisecond.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So then Gambit has a huge fight with the Sentinel.
Okay. I have a problem with this. I don't think anyone on any motorcycle can catch Rogue flying when she's that pissed off.
It's fine.
I mean, she does have Carol Danvers' power, strength, speed, super.
He also charged it up with his ability too.
Charge a bike to make it go faster.
But the explosion
he did at the end.
Well, energy does. It enhances and like the speed. Like
I don't know if it made it faster, but I'm happy to believe that he can catch up with her on a motorcycle. Motorcycle can go pretty fast.
Yeah, maybe like, anytime he's like in a fight, they say he's like very fast.
Yeah. Mm. So he comes in to challenge the Sentinel and stop it before it can do more damage. However, as he's coming in to hit it with his spear, they have a metal thing that cuts out spear. So
oh, my
favor.
Oh, my
God. I don't like hearing it.
And it holds him up right in the front with the spear in his side. And he's slumped over. And then it says... mutant, what's it say? Unidentified mutant detained or whatever.
It was like threat neutralized, and they didn't even classify neutralized. It was just like
that's right.
You're just a threat.
You see the spike that's in him start charging up all the way down the spike from his body.
Oh yeah,
and then the glow so reflecting amazing. On his face. He looks at him and says, "The name's Gambit."
His
name's Gambit. Remember it.
And then he charges up the entire Sentinel at once, and it explodes.
Which he destroys the unkillable Sentinel. It was amazing. One of the best sacrifices ever.
Oh, it was. Good. This is why I'll talk about it in my next point, but we'll talk more.
Is Gambit an Omega level mutant, or was he ever?
No. But maybe he could have been.
Well, here's the thing. He may have been. He got his own powers diminished by Mr. Sinister on purpose because he couldn't control them. That's why he was a marauder.
That's in the comics, not in the show.
So, I'm sick of your distinctions, Andre. Where do you think all this material's coming from?
It is, but like you have to understand.
Where do you think this wild Sentinel came from?
If it's not established. Yes, but they're going to explain where it came from in the continuity of the show. You can't assume that 70 years of continuity or 80 years of comic continuity is all hidden in this show and hasn't been established yet.
Well, if we're talking about power sets, the best references we have are the comic books. Fair enough.
But in relation to this show, he's never shown power to this level before. But he is dying, so maybe he gives it all. So this is him giving all of his power at once to... but we see the X-Men seeing the horror on TV of what happened. Trish Tilby saying that they're getting all these images from what's happening at Genosha. Cyclops is Beast is overcome with emotion. Cyclops is yelling, "How many are dead?
How many? Damn it!"
It didn't do much. But did we talk about how, like, when Magneto was just like whipping the shit out of the Sentinel with a train?
Oh yeah, that was we did. You were gone when we were talking about it.
Sorry,
We see some of the people that survived. Glob Herman survived, thank God. Glob Herman did not die.
He's quite impervious, actually. So like he
looks so cool design wise. Yeah. Pixie's there.
Nightcrawler.
I think he could have just teleported away.
Like, who's the young black girl with the multicolored hair?
I think that's Cypher.
That's the Cypher.
No, the other that was different than the Cypher that was dancing with the yellow headband.
Oh,
it's a different girl.
Damn.
Oh, she's got like red, yellow, blue streaks to her hair.
Oh yeah. I think I have.
It's got little buns on the side and like bangs in the front. Anyway, if any of the fans want to jump in and let us know. So they're all walking around in the crater and seeing Gambit's dead body and Rogue holding him. And she's crying and touching him with her hands. And as it cuts to black, you hear her say, I can't feel you. And then it cuts right to black, goes right to the credits. It's fucking perfect episode. The end.
Reporter? She transforms into animals?
Okay. Huh. I don't know who that character is. Her name's Reporter?
Reporter? Weird. Is that right?
Oh, the girl with the braids.
Oh, we also get, and then we see the end credits with the spinning with a really sad piano version of the X-Men theme song.
Oh my god, no, hold on.
Sugar, I can't feel you.
Okay. My god, the second time I watched that, I even cried again.
It's such a good episode.
It together the third time, but my god. And see, Jack's right here. Excellent performance by Lenore. Like that,
100%.
That fade to black with her crying is heartbreaking. It's so heartbreaking. My god. I'm going to cry just thinking about it. But yeah.
Yep. It's a pitch perfect episode. It's fantastic.
Oh, it's pitch perfect TV. It's just it was so good. It's so amazing. But let's talk about how good.
All right.
In our segment, regular segment, of course.
Each of us will have to look into his own heart and decide.
Oh, you know what? I got those images though too, like her being pissed, and then like this end image is just brutal. That's brutal.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah,
so good. Yeah. The show's so fucking good.
And look at the charred remains of the Sentinel or like buildings or something in the background there.
Yeah, and half his hair is singed away. It's super super really cool. Yeah,
brutal. But yeah, it's time for some X ratings. We got to look into our hearts and decide.
Can we all just agree on the count of three what we're gonna give it? 1, 2, 3.
X one.
It's fantastic.
It's an 11.
No, you can't give an 11, Devin. It's all an X. X.
All right. Well, it's the most easy X we've ever given anything.
Oh, easy. 100%.
Is this the best episode of the show, including the old series?
I can say beyond a shadow of a doubt, yes.
Yeah, I think it is,
too. I mean, it does predicate on the fact that we watched the previous show for it to mean as much as it did.
Of course.
But based on everything, like, it's based on emotion and doing something different with the show, innovative, the action sequences, the design of the characters, the design of the Wild Sentinel. It's beautiful. Beautiful episode. 10. Easy 10. Can never convince me it's not a 10.
Mm-mm. Yeah, it's so good. I want to go watch it again. I've already watched it a bunch of times. Just everything. Oh, god. And it's 36 minutes, too. Like, I love that we're getting like extra length on these episodes. Like, whatever the story needs, they seem to give it that length. They're not set on any amount of time. That's pretty
good. Even some of the episodes this season have been longer than the normal, like, thought of length from the original series. Because, like, the original...
Which was, like, 22 minutes.
21, 22. Now, like, these ones are, like, 27, 28. Like, this one...
36. This one's 36, yeah. It's great.
Yeah. I like you said, I like that
I think the last one was quite short, right? The Mojo one.
Like, oh, yeah, the one... Motendo.
Motendo and Life Death Part 1.
I think that was quite short, but yeah. Two half stories, as Andre said.
Just 1 second.
A plot A and a plot B point for
yeah. line. Interesting choice. Yeah. It's the most curious choice of the season, other than swapping some of the voice actors around. It was like just jamming those two stories together.
The cats have this game they play where one is trying to get out the door and the other one is on the other side and just batting at each other through the door, and they decided to put them in a call. Anyway.
Go ahead, Andre.
Oh, I'm first? All right. Well, I'm just going to read. This is my point was that this episode, Remember It, which is Gambit's final words, of course, before he blows up the Tri-Sentinel. And also is something that we always say in relation to another big event that this episode reminded me of, which is 9/11. And because of it, like Bo DiMaio has said when he talked about this episode, that this was the centerpiece of his pitch to Marvel. The idea to have the X-Men mirror the journey that any of us have, because the 90s, everything felt safe. It felt, you know, safer. But then 9/11 came and made everybody feel not safe anymore in this world. And that's what he wanted the show to reflect as well. So our journey as adults now, leading on from where the X-Men show was, is mirroring, you know, within the X-Men world as well. So they had their own of a sort, 9/11, for lack of a better term.
He also mentioned he borrowed elements from like the Orlando Pulse massacre.
Yes, he did. Yeah. Because you saw there was like
I live like maybe 40 minutes from the downtown area, and that when I heard that, that was it was gut wrenching.
Yes, agreed. I believe there's even like during this beam where you saw a bunch of mutants either about to die or get saved by Gambit. There's like two male mutants, it looks like, that are holding each other. Like yeah, that seemed to be a couple, which was nice too.
And one's Bo DiMaio, and the other one's Jake Castorena.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah, he actually Jake actually confirmed it on his Instagram. He put that picture as his profile.
I picked it right away watching it too. I'm like, oh my god, Bo DiMaio got snuck into this episode. That's crazy because of the firing. I was like, whoa.
His exact quote is, "The world was seemingly safer place for us, where a character like Storm could comment and how skin based racism was quaint in one man's worth." For the most part, to be fair,
that was Future Storm from a different timeline.
The world was a simple place of right and wrong, where questions of identity and social justice had relatively clear cut answers. He said that perceptions changed prior to 9/11. Things weren't safe anymore. Grassroots populist movements began to rise around the world as the whole nation struggled to deal with it. And then COVID and other things as well. He said Gambit's whole story was designed in a specific direction ahead to this. The crop top, everything was made you to love him. It was all intentional. But eventually 9/11, Tulsa, Charlottesville, the Pulse nightclub teach him anything. It's that too many stories are often cut far too short. And he mentions the Pulse stuff as well. You're in Orlando, are you, Hanif?
I live in Claremont, which is like 20 minutes outside of Orlando, but the downtown air scene is like about 40, 45 for me.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, I was getting mad texts when that unfortunate incident happened, and it was scary. Yeah, fortunately, I was nowhere close to it, but prayers to everyone who lost somebody.
He says, like many of us who grew up in the OG cartoon, the X-Men have now been hit hard by the realities of an adult and unsafe world, which is what I was feeling like, too. So it's cool to see that kind of like have him to get exactly what he was planning on. Life happened to them like it did with us. We have to decide which parts of themselves we'll cling to and which parts to let go in order to do what they're telling humanity to do, face an uncertain future they never saw coming. Mm-hmm. As Trask told Cyclops in the premiere, you have no idea what it's like to be left behind by the future. Now the X-Men do. And like each of us, they'll have to weigh together. Weigh whether it's time for social justice or, as Magneto preached at his trial, a time for social healing. So, the whole 9/11 comparison was not lost in me, and it sounds like it was very much intentional. Mm-hmm. So, beautiful, beautiful episode. That's my point.
Got an next point for us, Anif?
Actually, I did see this comment that really like made me like say, oh, wow. Somebody said, in chess, a gambit is a sacrifice to gain an advantage, usually to protect and advance the queen. In this case,
Gambit
Gambit made the ultimate sacrifice, a very poetic symbolism.
That's the Queen of Hearts, too. That was that was the nod. The Queen's Gambit. That's awesome.
Yeah, so I saw that and I was like, whoa. I had to like,
that
is
amazing.
I had to screenshot that quote and I was like, I need to share this.
That's awesome. I never thought of that either, but it's true. Yeah, because he gets rid of the queen and when he throws in the fire.
Yeah.
And that's like shadowing the Queen's Gambit play where you make the big sacrifice.
Yeah, throwing the motorcycle at her to get her out the way.
Yeah. And save her by sacrificing himself and stopping it. So, cool. Devin?
Well.
I think Anif and I have enough if you don't have any.
No, I have 10 here, but like we mentioned most of them. Did we talk about Dazzler?
Yes, we mentioned her when you were gone, that she was on. She was there.
Boom Boom's here, too. Did we talk about Boom Boom?
Oh, yeah, she was in the crowd. She bumped into Rogue and like gave her like a high five or something.
Yeah, oh, right. Yeah, she did. That's awesome.
Yeah, I like Boom Boom, so I thought I'd mention her. And like, I don't know, I got to talk about it again. Exit isn't a dance number. That's crazy. That dude is from like the 10th century or some shit. And he's just there like boogieing.
Well, you see, he had a lot of time to learn dance moves.
Yeah, I guess so. And like he does get into the mutant cause. He would love a place like Genosha, but it's just funny. It's like of all the choices to choose, they just do this dance number and you just see Exodus and like it was pretty funny.
That is funny.
They knew what they were doing. They knew how funny that was, I think.
All right. I have a bunch of points, but so I'll just do each of them and then throw the extra ones out later. I assume you're going to talk about Graham Morrison, Devin. So,
I might.
Val. I think Val is definitely Mystique. I know it's been an online theory for a while.
You know what?
Why was she so interested in Rogue being with Magneto, number one? Number two, there's a theory online that her eyes change color. If you notice in certain
I did scenes, notice that.
Her eyes are different colors.
And I was like, at first when I heard the story, I was like, oh, come on. Like, can we just have one without Mystique fucking up?
Yeah. But I think
I'm starting to believe it because just where she shows up and her reactions every time something goes. Yep.
I think it'll be a revelation at the very end of the season, tying into whatever the next season is. But yes, I do fully believe that she's Mystique now.
Okay.
That's because like I don't think the animators make mistakes in the show. So I think you know, like the ponytail thing, all that stuff was all connected to that. I feel like the color of her eyes changing in different episodes is definitely a subtle hint as to what the truth is, that maybe Mystique messed it up.
But my only counterpoint to that is Wolverine was standing next to
her
on several occasions. You would think you would sniff that out.
Same with Jean, right? So I don't know. Maybe they'll have an explanation, but I do believe there's something up with her. Because why would she care that Rogue is with Magneto? Unless she's something else or some other connection to.
Or maybe she just has a tight connection to the X-Men because, you know, she did say that Charles was a good friend of hers. And
yeah, but like
in the comics, she runs X-Factor.
And maybe
within the show, we didn't meet her until this show. So this show. So she's only known the X-Men to us for five episodes. It seems like not their 4.5 episodes. It seems not that deep of connection to be that invested.
And also, you know, obviously she still has some resentment towards Magneto. So maybe she just doesn't want to see Rogue get mixed up with him. Because, you know, she's still referring to him as a terrorist, even though they pardoned him.
But she also doesn't really seem to like him too much, right? And that might have something to do with the Rogue connection as well. So
yeah,
I'm going to let it. I do think there's something up with her, and we'll figure out what that is. Because I don't like why. I just don't understand why. So
well, they did tease before the show premiere that Val Cooper has some kind of I think the word was sinister, like intentions or some kind of ulterior motives. So. That's what their description was.
It was something to do with an episode, the episode description. Yeah, I think you're right.
And then even like when they first were like, I think when at one of the conventions, when they were showing the concept art, they had Val Cooper on the villain side.
Oh, really?
Which made, she was standing next to Sebastian Shaw, Emma Frost, Callisto.
Well, that was probably just from this episode because they're all at that thing.
Serenity makes a good point. The Sentinel didn't target Val. Killed all the mutants around her.
Well, no, it killed humans too. It killed Moira MacTaggert.
What?
Moira MacTaggert was killed. When it showed all the bodies of the people lying under the blanket, she was one of them.
Oh, maybe she was in the crossfire.
Yeah, well, so
maybe,
but I don't think.
I mean, those were some big blasts, so anybody could have got it.
Jean isn't Chuck. She doesn't go around reading people's minds willy nilly. Good point.
Fair enough.
She has morals. Yeah, but yes, we did mention the magic age up there, D, in the last episode. But you know, it still was cool to see badass magic with the big sword.
Well, it could have, yeah. Did we know? I don't know if that old episode they said the kid's name, did they? Did they say it?
No, they didn't. Morph just turned into magic and was like,
No, but I meant when you
no, first. No, he means the kid. When you see, yes, he calls her Ileana many times.
Okay. That. Yeah, he does. You're right.
Ileana.
All right, that's my second point.
All right, you got another one for us, Anif?
This is all right. So just rock with me. So I found a lot of similarities with the Genosian Council to that of like the Wakandan Council from like Black Panther, because if you look at the members of the council, each of them represented like a different facet in like the mutant community, whether like the upper class, the lower class, like the science division, healthcare. Nightcrawler was a member of like the faith community or whatever. Obviously, Emma and Sebastian were like, you know, the probably handling the finances. You know, Callisto, one of the like the regular people, so to speak. You know, she's on the board, and then Magneto and Madeline representing the X-Men or the Brotherhood in their own facets. So, I felt it. I was getting like Black Panther, like Wakandan. Council vibes because like each of the different facets that they represented.
It's awesome.
I'm going to branch off on your point actually. Cool. And say I got Krakoan Council vibes because a lot of those same characters were on the Krakoan Council. I mean, Sebastian and Emma were on the Krakoan Council, and so yeah, it's in the same thing. They had them separated into like summer, winter, and fall or something in that, but they were like trying to get mutants from different perspectives and things as well.
Yeah.
So Yeah. Interesting.
Very cool. He's...
Not that it matters now.
Is it back to me?
Yep. Yeah.
Did you guys notice somebody watching from the skies?
Yes, we did.
Yes, we did.
The watcher was in the sky. They had the outline of him watching just before the Sentinel attacked. So it's a nice nod to the other animation, Marvel animation series, What If? And also,
well, and rumor has it X-Men characters are going to show up in the next season of What If?
Yeah. Why not? Why not? Mm.
But that also scares me, because doesn't Uatu usually show up when it's like a fixed point in time, which is kind of making me think that maybe this whole thing might not be able to be undone.
Yeah, well, that was going to be another point I was going to make, but I think I've used all my points, so I'll wait and we can just freestyle.
No, you haven't. We're still going around.
Well, I use three.
You get the fourth when you start it.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, well, Uatu is supposed to show up whenever there's big events or, you know, any big historical events. I don't know if it's about fixed points in time or not, but something that's like a very important historical event is usually around for.
Yeah.
Which this will be. I mean, it's a huge thing that just happened, and, you know. That's why we're going to see Captain America show up and that sort of thing. But
that might be a fun past story. We don't know what that's in connection to yet, do we?
I'm kind of...
Well...
I hope we get like Avengers characters. It'd be nice if we saw the wider
I think
world.
It's in Canada somewhere. I think he's tracking down Wolverine.
I'm on the opposite end of that. I kind of want to see. I kind of want the Avengers and all these non X-Men related characters to stay away from the show. To be honest.
Well, it would be weird if the Avengers just show up and help them out, you know, through some big event. So I get you there, but
yeah,
we do know Spider-Man is in this universe and Captain America, so.
Yeah, but just keep it strictly X-Men. Avengers have had their go, but the X-Men are back. Let's give the Kings their proper
crown.
But yeah, I see that. I'm okay with that. But we'll see what they're going to do. I feel like honestly, based on five episodes that have been, I think, eights to tens for me for the show, I can't, you know, I trust what they're going to do. I'm sure it's going to be great. So anyway,
did you give something an eight? You weren't big on Motendo.
Not really. Yeah. I didn't hate it.
It's the worst one.
An eight is still really high, dude. You act like an eight is like a fail. You know, eight's still really high. 8 out of 10 is very high. 80% is very high.
It's passing.
If you lost 80% of your blood, you'd be in trouble. Oh, lucky. A lot of trouble. 80's high.
You might be.
Okay, sorry. All right, so Uatu's appearance was my third point.
It's a good one. Got one more, Hanif?
I was going to just run down the list of all the different cameos.
Yeah, do it. Do it. I was hoping you would.
All right. So we have Banshee, Dazzler, Nightcrawler, Pixie, Multiple Man or Madrix, Cypher, Nature Girl, Leech, Loa, Glob.
Oh, Loa. Mm-hmm.
That's the girl. Mask, Erg, Tommy, Abe, Callisto, Morlocks. Boom Boom, Emma Frost, Sebastian Shaw, Cable, Exodus, Trish Tilby, Moira McTaggart, Mero, Squid Boy, Krosta? That was the water dude.
Okay.
Archangel, obviously the Watcher, Madeline Pryor, Valerie Cooper, Bo DeMaio, Jay Custarina. And I think that's it. Somebody.
You said Nature Girl, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you say Gargoyle?
No.
Gargoyle. Lavina LeBlanc. She, the wing girl with the horns, she was on my list.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay. Somebody also said that if you, like, there's a certain point in the show, in the episode, where if you pause it, you could see a potential Bastion in the crowd.
I know. Bastion was in a different episode already.
He was in the picture with the Forge in them, but somebody said that he was like just randomly walking by. You just see this old white dude with a strikingly similar hair.
Well, maybe that's gonna play into where the season ends.
Yeah,
isn't he tied to Onslaught too?
Yeah, maybe he's. So
maybe that's where they're headed.
Well, that's gonna be my last point, actually.
All right,
I was gonna say maybe he's the one that Cable was saying he's coming.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah,
and maybe why they're subtly hitting him with some connection to Forge too, right?
Yeah,
because time travel Forge is related to that as well.
But I also I also saw a theory. Somebody said maybe Sebastian Shaw might have been responsible for putting the Sentinels where they were. Because, I mean, anybody who knows the comics knows Sebastian Shaw kind of was like a slimy character who...
he's also dead. Well, he might not really be dead if that's the case, but he was one of the people that died in the attack.
Well, I'm kind of doubting that because he was just laying on the stretcher with his eyes closed. Like, you could be, maybe he was unconscious.
I think they're all supposed to be dead because Madeline Pryor was too.
Yeah, well, she was like in the brunt of the blast.
But she was laying beside
him. That's weird, though, with him, though. That's like killing Bishop with a blast. It's like he absorbs shit like that. So, like,
that's why I'm like doubting him.
But the beam seems to somehow.
It could be specific.
Mutant powers, or, you know, somehow. It seems to go through mutant stuff. Definitely there's some people.
It was clearly enough to take down an Omega level threat.
Yeah.
Or is it? So.
Well, I have a thing. Well, anyway, go ahead, Devin.
Well, my theory. I have two theories.
Go ahead.
I think you can go one of two ways. One, it's either supposedly Xavier and Magneto are both dead now, so it's like the perfect place for Onslaught to be, the way they bring them both back. And I could see them going that way. But there's also the chance that Magneto didn't die in that moment because you don't see it. You don't see his body. Yeah. You don't see any of it. You just see the beam get bigger and it goes like he could have done one of a million things. It's Magneto. He's even opened wormholes in the comics before with his powers and gone through them. So, but which sounds cheesy, but you know, Chris Claremont wrote it, so I guess you got to give it to him. But yeah, so I don't know. I'm not convinced Magneto is dead, but if he is, again, that could be where they bring in Onslaught.
Bo DeMille actually confirmed that Archangel made it out.
Yeah, good.
Archangel, I assume so. Made it out.
Okay. Which is great. He needs to join the team.
Yeah, well, they did show the picture of the original team with him on it again before. So in this episode as well, it was on the wall.
Yeah.
And luckily, Nightcrawler didn't get killed.
No, he's still alive, too.
Yeah.
All right, so my last point. I have a few things I wanted to mention. I'll just briefly say we didn't talk about that this episode is heavily influenced by Grant Morrison's E is for Extinction story in when he took over X-Men in the 2000s. That giant Sentinel showing up and wiping out Genosha and killing millions of mutants in one swoop was 100% from that story, as well as Gambit cheating on Jean psychically with someone else. In the comic, it was White Queen.
Cyclops, you mean? Yes.
Or what I said, Magneto, sorry. Yes,
Cyclops. Gambit.
Cyclops. But in the comic, it was with Emma Frost, but, you know. And they did make a subtle nod to her noticing that they were doing that. Which leads me to believe that maybe Cassandra Nova, maybe who's behind this, but being that she's the villain, supposedly the villain in the Deadpool movie, who knows?
I feel like they won't use her in both places, but maybe they will.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe it's another way to like get you to know who she is for when the Deadpool movie comes out. So it could be some corporate synergy there. If it is, I'll be interested to see how they handle that because I'm a huge fan of Grant Morrison's run. I think I'm overdue to reread it.
You are.
I know. I've talked about it a lot in this show. All right. That was. I got a couple of things to say.
What?
Check this out.
Rewind.
Only a couple of things. The Newton brothers who did the score on this series. They're most note. Like I'm a huge fan of them from their work on all of the Mike Flanagan shows. The Haunting of Hill House, The Haunting of Bly Manor, the new Fall of the House of Usher series, they scored all of that. They also did Midnight Mass and a bunch of other, all Mike Flanagan's work, which I'm a huge fan of. Dr. Sleep, awesome. Number two, I think you might be right. I think we could see Magneto come back. I don't think we should see Gambit come back. To build up the way they did, to have this sacrifice, it would rob this episode of how powerful it is. If you could say that somebody teleported in, maybe Cable teleported, time slipped in and grabbed Magneto before they all died. You could do that. Okay. That's fine. I'll accept that. I think Gambit needs to stay dead.
Okay, so here's the thing.
It'll rob this episode of all of its power if they bring him back.
If they're going to come back as a horseman of apocalypse, that's my guess.
There's that. And if you're going to keep Gambit dead, then they better replenish the team with, like, you know, members that aren't.
Nightcrawler's
their fun guy with an accent to replace him, I think.
Or get Colossus or Psylocke. Maybe Iceman can join the team again.
I'd like to see Iceman on the team. I've always liked that character.
I want to see an episode where they actually have the original five members like team go up on some, like, random mission, and it just so happens to be them five.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I think like this episode is so good, and his sacrifice means so much to bring him back would ruin that. If they just have, like, everyone's saying that their Cable showed up, so there's going to be some time thing where they prevent this from happening. I think that would be a huge mistake. I think they could use it to maybe save Magneto or some other people, a few people. Mm. But I think if they make this not happen, then that would this then it just it's like waking up and
it
finding
would gut it.
Yes.
But we've already felt those feels, so they might not care.
No.
Like, they already had their effect.
I feel like these guys are smart enough to know that. I mean, it's like saying that every, like, watching a season of a show, and at the end they're like, oh, it was all a dream, you know?
But,
like,
you also have to accept that it's X-Men, and X-Men never stay dead. And if you expect them to, you're going in with the wrong mindset, because X-Men never stay dead.
Well, that's because it's poor writing in the comics. They can't, like, they just rely on the fans needing those characters to come back, instead of making new characters that are interesting and cool.
Well, Andre, let me ask you something. What were your feelings about all the heroes coming back in at the end of Endgame?
Good point.
Yeah, well, that they weren't gone forever. Like, it was set up that they were, like,
they were
wished away. No, but they were, like, they weren't dead corpses, and we didn't, like, and also the fact that it wasn't one hero's big sacrifice. It was everyone just disappearing at once.
It was Iron Man's big sacrifice.
But it was obvious. It was obvious in that movie that's what they were going to do. It's not so obvious in this that's what they're going to do. Well, I know what you're saying.
So this is better.
That's a fair point. Yeah, I would say it would be like trying to think of something like within the Marvel Universe, like when someone made a big sacrifice. Like if Black Widow came back, this is what it would be. If they brought her back to life. If they're like, oh, she's alive again, and then the movies, and they have her running around, it wouldn't be the same. Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't, I think it would rob it of the power it had when they did it. So, I don't know.
But that's what they did with Gamora. Like, Gamora had this big sacrifice, and they just brought her back. It's like,
no, they brought back an earlier time version of him. It's not the same Gamora. And in fact, that's the whole point of the third Guardians, is him trying to connect with her the same way he connected with her.
Okay, so are you okay with it if they do that? If they bring Gambit back, and it's just a slightly different
version? Yeah, I would actually. That'd be fine. So they're not going to, because that would be dumb, because they did it before, but I'd be okay with it.
They will. He'll come back as the Horseman of Apocalypse.
Okay, we'll see. But I think it may make some fans happy. I think it makes good, it's bad storytelling. But we'll see.
Well, hey, check this out. So, some storytelling that some of us may say isn't the best, but Andre loves. Grant Morrison. Check it out. E for Extinction. This is where the Wild Sentinel happens.
Well, what are your feelings?
The art's awful. I mean, look at this. I'm not a Quietly guy. I think they all look awful. Emma's supposed to be attractive, and look at her face. Like,
it wasn't necessarily my favorite run. Like I mentioned, art was kind of a.
But Devin's never like Frank Quietly. I like him. It's different.
I mean, I'm an old school guy. It's Jim Lee and Claremont for me.
Yeah, it's fair.
Mm. But I do have one more recommendation.
What about, like, Joe Matter? I never pronounce his name.
Yes.
X-Men 97 number one. Read that as well. It fills in the time between the two series.
How long is the series?
What?
Well, I don't know, because they just released the second issue. So.
Okay.
I think it's maybe four.
Told Davin about it, because I was reading the first issue, and it was actually really good, because it provided a lot of missing context. There was, like, a lot of story points that they hit. You kind of see Jean or Maddie in her earlier stages of before she finds out that she's pregnant. She's like kind of getting.
She's got a bellyache.
Yeah, she's got a bellyache, and Scott's like, "Oh, you can stay home." And then they have there's a part in the story where they have to save Dazzler, who was kidnapped by the Friends of Humanity.
Yeah, that was cool.
And you see Jubilee actually, like, spring into action and actually save Dazzler from the FOH, which was a cool scene. Yeah. Like, they kind of, I was compared Dazzler and Jubilee kind of having similar power sets, and she's like, "Oh my gosh, I'm your biggest fan," and Dazzler's like, "If you save me, I'll be your biggest fan."
And Jubilee's just like, "Wow."
Yeah. You kind of get it.
That would be amazing.
You get a little introduction to what was the, like, reason why Storm cut her hair, and it was like this, it was this interesting explanation about, like, you know, getting in tune with the times and you know,
the Dazzler concert. She's like, I didn't want to look lame at the Dazzler concert, basically. She doesn't even go. She gives up her ticket to Bishop.
Yeah, and she stays behind and comforts Jean, who's like, you know, feeling left out because from Scott, or Scott's like ignoring her, and she's like, you know, doing the sisterly thing. And it's like, oh, don't talk to him. He shouldn't be ignoring your feelings, but just remember, he's also fighting for our future. And then that's when she kind of reveals to Scott that, you know, they're expecting, and Wolverine just so happened to be around the corner and listening, and then he just storms off.
Yeah. It's like, what it really does too is it fills in, like, any way you've noticed that any of these characters are slightly different than their counterparts from the earlier series, they're gradually making those changes through this comic book. Like, so it's like,
cool. No, that's a read it.
Yeah. So oh, and they, make it a little more smoother.
Oh, and this was kind of like their first introduction to Valerie Cooper. And
yep, they, she,
like,
shows up.
She basically introduces herself as like a mutant liaison, and she said Charles is a friend, was a friend of hers, and she wants to help the X-Men as much as she can. And then that was like kind of the forming of their partnership.
Beast is like, it's not long before the series, because Beast is like working on the time device of Bishop's and getting pretty close on it.
Yeah.
So, cool. Yeah, so stuff like that. Everyone go read it. It's pretty cool.
I used to not be a fan of like prelude comics, but like
Me neither.
Like, I used to read some of the preludes of like some of the MCU movies, and I was like, these are not hidden like that.
No, they don't offer much. I used to try to read the Trek ones, and
yeah, there's a lot of those. I used to read the Spider-Man ones too. The it was back when this cartoon was out. They put out a comic called X-Men Adventures and Spider-Man Adventures.
That was just reprinted episodes from the.
No, they had their own stories within the universe eventually. It was like the first few were copying episodes of the show, and then eventually they made their own thing.
Yeah.
All right, my recommendation is this. I just started reading it about halfway through. It's very interesting. It's Matt Fraction's Superman's pal, Jimmy Olsen. And it's a whole series about Jimmy Olsen trying to solve his own murder. But it's very disjointed. Like, it kind of takes place all over different timelines and back and forth and stuff. But it's very funny. And if you like the classic Jimmy Olsen. Yeah, Matt Fraction's fun. If you like the classic Jimmy Olsen having weird different powers and taking different forms and all this strange stuff, it's all in here. It's really fun. And it's got some classic art from Steve Lieber, who I believe is Stan Lee's brother, if I'm not correct.
He is,
correct. Yeah. Yeah, so some beautiful art from him. And it's very classic, fun, super, like, playing with old Jimmy Olsen continuity stuff. It's a blast. Very fun.
You get a comic recommendation for us, Anive?
I mean, I was actually going to suggest the X-Men.
X-Men? All right. I stole yours. Sorry, man.
Yeah, well, actually, I'll recommend issue number 2, which just dropped recently, so.
I don't have that one yet, so sweet.
Yeah, it's that one is actually a really good one, too.
I'll have to pick
it. It was sold out at the comic shop today.
What's your comic shop, Devin? Is it
Giant Robot?
Giant Robot? Okay. Interesting. All right.
Yeah. All right, well. You know what? We're getting long in the tooth tonight, fellas.
Are you going to skip my segment?
Do you want to do you have a movie ready?
Yes, I do. It's right here.
All right, then let's do it.
You don't like the movie? Change the channel.
Oh, you're right, MZ. He does. Wolverine does smell a familiar scent in that issue.
Val?
Well, it's not clear.
Okay.
I think it was
I think it was Carl Denti. I think it's Executioner that he's.
Yeah, because in the scene where they after they rescue Dazzler, they arrest the Val Cooper arrives and arrests the FOH members, and one of the members of Cooper's team was actually Denti undercover. Yeah. And it was like he basically whispers to one of the guys, he's like, "Stick with me. I'll get you out."
Mm-hmm. Wolverine seems to know Denti from somewhere, which is interesting.
Probably. I mean, they've encountered the Friends of Humanity so many times. I'm sure he could smell every one of them.
Yeah, it could be.
All right. Well, my recommendation is another timeless classic animated piece that took characters we grew up loving in our childhood and murdered them all in something that was supposed to be something we're supposed to enjoy, but traumatized a whole generation. Transformers the movie.
Yeah,
the original animated Transformers film, in which all the characters we grew to know and love from the TV series got wiped out horribly in very similar scene to how they did in this. So I was thinking, I was like, what's something that's similar to that? And that's all I get to this episode. And that's the first thing that jumped to mind. It's like, hey, remember all these characters you loved for six seasons? A bunch of them are dead now because, you know, and yeah.
Actually, I went to a Fathom event of like, it was like the 30th anniversary of the movie.
Oh, really? That's awesome.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
This is the Shout Factory Blu-ray. That's out there. So
yeah, they had it on the like the 4K screen. It was insane.
Well, my wife and I used to go down to Orlando once in a while, and Eve to go to Universal or Disney. Yeah. I want to go down and check out the Star Wars world and Disney eventually. So
if we're
down there, maybe we should meet up for a drink sometime.
Of course.
That'd be awesome.
I'm down.
Probably be a little while before we get there again.
Perhaps you better take over from here.
I don't have a music recommendation, but I just want you both.
I just want to make one final point about this movie. This is the final movie that Orson Welles was in. Orson Welles, before he died, this was his last film.
Right.
So that's a fun side note.
That is a fun side note. I don't have a music recommendation, but I do want you both to repeat after me. Ready? On the count of three. One, two, three. Ace of Base.
Ace of Base.
Ace of Base.
Yay, they're here. Yeah.
No. All right.
I love it.
Worth a shot.
Circa 1992.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well. I thought we could call Ace of Base in for a private show. Didn't work. It's fine.
That'd be amazing.
Man, but you, honestly, they must be laughing because they must be raking in the downloads.
I just added it. I have a...
Their streaming sales like jumped like some crazy number.
Too bad Spotify doesn't pay artists, but if they did, none of them really would be very happy right now.
But you know what? Hopefully, it'll mean that there'll be more attendance at their tours when they tour. So.
Yeah, true enough.
That's usually what the hope is, right? That's where most artists make their money anyway.
You got to be ready to capitalize on a moment like this too. I'm sure they have some way to get some monetization out of this.
Well, you know, I'm sure it's gonna. It's funny because I'm just glancing at their. There it is. I was glancing at their essentials on Apple Music, and Happy Nation's right around the middle.
Oh, okay.
So, but it's probably coming up. Yeah, I always like Ace of Base. Their cover of "Cruel Summer" by Bananarama I would argue is better than the original. But it is
better than the original.
I think so.
All right. Well, what?
Also, all that she wants is a great song too.
All that she wants
is another baby. Now, let's just sing Ace of Base for the next album.
I saw the sign.
What do you do? You're like, I will not stand for this mockery of Ace of Base, sir.
All I need now is for you to contact your students, Professor.
Well, lucky you, my friends. Tomorrow means you get to watch the next episode of this show.
Can't wait.
And if you're up late tonight at 4 a.m., you get to watch it.
What's it called?
3 a.m. your time.
And I will probably be
up because I'm awesome.
It is called Life Death Part 2. It is a sequel.
Death Part 2 is up next.
So obviously after the devastating revelation of this episode, they're going to give us a cool-down episode in which we follow what Storm's doing.
And apparently there's something else happening in this episode because they just released the official clip for like.
Oh, did they?
I
didn't see it.
Apparently, we're going to outer space and we are running into one Deathbird and the Shi'ar Imperial.
It had to happen at some point.
Oh, maybe we're getting to find out what happened to Charles.
Yeah. Well, it was a small clip. Basically, they are running Ronan the Accuser like. Through the works and they were looking for the Supreme Intelligence, and he's like, and Deathbird's like, tell me where she's at or tell me where he's at or your team is gonna get wasted. And then as he's about to like do the final blow, one of the Shi'ar operatives is like, your sister needs you. And she's like, oh, my sister, I can always make time for her, like very sarcastically. So something fishy is But you do see a lot of cameos of the Imperial Guard, including Guardian. What's the one, the yellow and white that shoots the light?
Manta.
Manta. Yeah, Manta's in there. And we also actually get an early preview of Vulcan.
Oh, cool.
What? All right, no more spoilers. I feel like I just saw the whole episode, and
I just was looking for that clip to look up later, and I was watching the clip of Jean Grey's vision in the previous episode when she saw the baby and she saw the Sentinel head rise out of the sand, which I think was supposed to represent this, not the Master Mold, because it shoots green beam out when it explodes and it shows a big graveyard full of corpses. So this is all a hint to what was coming from this, which is very interesting.
Speaking of, did you catch the little when Jean was talking to Wolverine in the lake, and she was talking about when her and Scott went to like Nevada, and that was like a direct reference from the Dark Phoenix saga when they went to wherever that place was that Angel was at. I thought it was Arizona, but
no, they were like in the he was in the snow place when he saw Psylocke.
No. It was like, it was during the Dark Phoenix saga. Like they escaped. It was after they saved them from Emma Frost, and then Cyclops and Jean, they took like a little mini vacation to like one of Angel resorts in like the middle of like like Nevada or something. And that's when Jean did the whole like, I'm gonna shut off your eye beams with my powers, and that's when he was like getting a little scared about that.
Which
they both mentioned in this episode,
and I thought, I thought that was kind of weird, because I was like, okay, that definitely was one of those scenes that didn't happen in the original, because it's like Jean sacrificed herself in the Phoenix Saga, and then all of a sudden she comes back, and then she's under test.
X-Men always
got into the Dark Phoenix.
It's bad storytelling if they do, man. It's a perfect end.
Was the Dark Phoenix a bad story?
It would have been better if she died. Was it better in the comics?
Claremont wanted her to die.
Yeah, of course.
But you can support the show at patreon.com/X-Men Review Show. Get your sweet merch over at redbubble.com/people/X-Men Review Show/shop. And contact us at X-Men Review Show@gmail.com, or just hit me up on Facebook. You know, normally what people do.
It actually would have been more interesting on the show if they had killed her then. And then we find out now, when Jean comes back, that that was Madeline Pryor.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and then that would have been a bit, yeah, maybe. So
we might find that out. You follow us
That's
on
true.
YouTube,
maybe
Facebook,
maybe Madeline will come back as the Phoenix.
Well, Jean already doesn't really know what memories are hers.
Exactly, yeah.
Neither does Maddie.
It could be like some like multiversal like type of like she's got memories.
Oh, it could be all kinds of shit. Yeah, who knows?
Different like Earth or something.
It could be a telepathic thing too, where they just automatically, without even knowing it, share each other's memories, because they both have both the memory. Like they both have memories. It's not like one picks up here. They both have all the memories.
Yeah,
so it's very strange. Find our audio only version wherever you get your podcast. Please like, review, and subscribe. Give us some reviews, people. We'd love to hear it. A proud member of the United Federation of Podcasts, we are, and you can find that at ufpodcast.com. It's late. I'm skipping the rundown tonight, but what's going on over on La Historie Graphique.
Episode with Stephen Grant, famous Marvel writer, did a lot of Punisher comics, just dropped. And then next week we got Becky Kinsey. And then after that, Andrew Thomas. And then after that, I think Keith Gretchow.
Your guess is as good as mine on that one.
Yeah, I know. I'm going to have to ask him to pronounce that.
Yeah.
And then maybe Jennifer Rossman. I got a few that are still kind of up in the air at the moment, but. And a few follow-ups I got to do that Davin sent me. So hopefully more episodes coming down. But those are the next two that are confirmed. And after that, we're not too sure.
Where can people find you, Hanif?
Just Facebook, on Instagram.
What do you do in life, Hanif? What's your job?
I'm a photographer.
People. Oh, beautiful.
Yep.
What do you photograph?
I work at
What do you photograph?
I am.
I like photography.
If
I work at Discovery Cove.
No. Oh, okay. Is that like a tourist thing?
Yeah, it's like a resort where people get to swim with dolphins.
Oh, cool. Okay.
So they got me in the water, waist deep with the big cuddly fellows.
That's why you knew who Squid Boy was.
Of course. Well, I watched Wolverine. They worked together. X-Men.
Yeah, right on.
And then when I'm not doing that, I do photography for Little League sports. So
I drive
all over Florida, from all the way from Miami to up to like Panama City, just doing whatever league I get assigned to, whether it be baseball, football, soccer, basketball, cheerleading, all the fun stuff.
That's awesome.
Mm. Yeah.
Very good.
Very cool.
That's like the most wholesome job I've ever
had. I know, it sounds lovely. Seeing kids like having really good fun times, like that seems like a wonderful job.
Yeah.
Capturing those moments.
Yeah, except
if I hadn't already cried out, I'd cry right now.
Yeah, and then it was funny because I got flagged on Facebook because it was one of those explain your profession badly. And I said something like, I shoot kids and I take their parents' money.
Oh man!
I'm not lying.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
Well, apparently, so does Bo DiMaio, because how else could he have gotten fired? It makes no sense. He's such a good writer. But I think we can call it a night here, fellas. Any final words?
Watch it. Read some comics, man. Get out there and read. Yeah. There's a lot of beautiful stuff out there waiting for you to read it.
True. 5 more episodes.
That's right. Pretty pumped. Then we're back. Devin can't wait. We're back to X-Men movie. Devin can't wait to get back there to watch. What's next on the list, Devin? It's Logan.
Does it even matter anymore?
It's Logan, I think, isn't it?
No.
Oh, no. It'd be X-Men Apocalypse. Oh, shit. Ugh. It's the one I've been dreading the most.
Gambit.
Yeah. That's
his name. Remember it.
Oh, for sure. That's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Catch you next time.
Next time.
Get everybody out. You have to get everyone out.